I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here today on the big program. Isaiah Poole from the Campaign for America's Future going to be here talking about the jobs numbers. The righties are, you know, doing everything they can do to downplay the fact that the economy is moving in the right direction. Not fast enough for, I think, just about anybody, but at least we're going in the right direction. I'm going to talk about that and, you know, some of the attacks the righties have been going on here lately. Also, the attack here in Pennsylvania against voters. We're going to talk with Rick Bloomingdale, president of the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO, on the voter harassment bill working its way through the Pennsylvania legislature. And again, you know, a solution, and you hear this time and time again, a solution for something that doesn't have a problem. I mean, to me, it's just dumb. The penalty for doing what this bill would fix, so-called fix, the penalty is so great for just one more vote. I mean, can anybody tell me when the last time a major election was decided by one vote? Or any election, for that matter, outside of high school? What they're trying to say is there are all these people out there who are impersonating others, and we need to have their IDs to make sure that they're really who they say they are. Yet they can't point to any measurable number of cases where this has happened. Why? Because it doesn't happen that often. And when it does, it's a matter of mistaken identity, if anything. And what we found in South Carolina was, and the Republicans were all, we found cases! Turned out a couple of them were folks had put in absentee ballots and died in the interim between when they mailed it and when it was counted. And the other ones were poll workers' problems. They checked off senior when, well, senior's dead. Junior came to vote. They've been going to that same poll for years and years. The family's been voting at that poll for 50 years. Senior dies off. Junior comes. And, oh, well, we're going to click off senior. That's the problem. Not anything that this suppression bill is going to help. But what it is, it's distraction. And that's really what it's about. We're also going to talk with Vife Paramore. She's the president of the Jefferson County, Alabama, AFT. She's one of the participants in the From Selma to Montgomery march in Alabama on voters' rights and education. We're going to talk to her. Also, Sarah Jaffe from Alternate Labor are going to be talking about using tax dollars to bust the unions. And again, you know, I look at all of the tax handouts. I look at the breaks we give to folks. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, especially when you look at the uses. We're going to create basically minimum wage jobs, and if they can get around that, they're going to. We'll talk to Sarah Jaffe about that. Also in the third hour, Kirk Dames is going to be here, a retired inventor from San Francisco who now lives in Brattleboro, Vermont, going to talk about Citizens United and getting the money out of politics. Also, your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. So, the big job numbers out. It appears as though we have created some 227,000 jobs here in the last month. And, well, the righty's not happy. Here in Pennsylvania, for instance, the Pennsylvania GOME, They've said as Obama and Casey celebrate 8.3% unemployment, millions of Americans are still looking for a job. They say we deserve better. Better what? Better what got us into this mess? I mean, stop and go back to November, go back to December 2008, go back to January 2009 before this president took over, and understand we were absolutely in a free fall because of the policies that the GOME wants to put forth. I mean, that's what's going on. Stop and think about the last 6 months. We have created 1.2 million jobs in the last 6 months. And that's in spite of everything the radical right is trying to do. That's in spite of all of the obstruction, all of the delay, all of the gridlock, all of the poison pills. In spite of all that, the economy continues to grow. And you look at the RNC statement. They said today's jobs report is yet another reminder that far too many Americans are out of work. The situation is clearly not improving. Yes, it is improving. 1.2 million jobs in the last 6 months. The best stretch, the best job numbers since 2006. Even in the face of the austerity crowd, even in the face of the GOME saying, we need to gut that public sector, we need to fire all those public workers. That's what they're doing. I mean, we've lost, what, three quarters of a million jobs in the public sector? So you got to make that mess up that they've caused. And then still grow on top of that. And for them, it's never going to be enough. Never going to be enough. Because for them, it's all about ideology. It's not about helping the country get better. It's not helping the country move forward. Nothing to do with that. And you look at the reality is every one of these major recessions, every one of these major pitfalls, who causes it? Well, it's the same failed ideology time and time again. This idea that we need to cut taxes, we need to cut gut regulations, we need to just hand everything to the top and somehow it will magically work its way down to the folks on the bottom. Now, the Republicans are pointing out, well, you know, the job, there are a lot of jobs, but it's 8.3%. Now, mark my words, Romney's going to eat his for talking about 8%. He had said something along the lines of, well, you know, it's still above 8%. Well, what happens come election time when it hits under 8%, which they're saying it may. But the 8.3% is kind of interesting because, you know, they keep using different numbers for the unemployment rate. You're now seeing more people coming back into the labor market because there's more optimism. There was just a poll. I didn't get a chance to talk about it this week. There was just a poll out that said, you know what? American workers are more optimistic. They're now those people who are discouraged, those people who had pulled out of the labor market. They're now going, hey, there might be some opportunity for me. And that's a good thing. In fact, you know, you saw labor participation. You saw the labor participation rate increase. You know, it's at its lowest point since it's been since the early 80s. The last Republican deep recession. But it's coming upward, and that's a good thing. Some 300,000, I'm told. 300,000 people went back into the job pool. So to see it at 8.3, part of me says, okay, that's good. Because we're seeing more encouraging signs. People are coming out. And, you know, I was reading one story where the guy said, you know, we're going to want to see the unemployment number go up a little bit. You don't want to see that go up. Why? Because more people are coming back. And while people looking for unemployment has fallen by 14% in these last 6 months, to see people coming back, I think it's a step in the right direction. Are we done? No. Absolutely not. In fact, there are, we got a lot of work to do. But the signs are encouraging that we're moving at least in the right direction. Now you look at the fact that there are more employees are working more hours. That's a good thing. Because eventually the employers say, well, I don't want to pay overtime. We're going to hire somebody. That's a good sign. A big jump from during the recession. So I'm encouraged. I think we're moving in the right direction. Now, the other good sign is manufacturing has added 31,000 more jobs. That's a good thing. That's solid. We need that kind of growth. We need to bring that stuff back here. My problem, and we could grow a whole lot more manufacturing, and it's something we've talked about in this program time and time and time again, is our massive ballooning trade deficit with everybody, especially the Chinese. For January of 2012, our trade deficit was $52.6 billion with a B, billion dollars, in 1 month. Now, you remember, December of 2011, it was 50.4. We've jumped up in January up to 52.6, $2.2 billion more after Christmas. January is usually a slower month. And our trade deficit with the Chinese, $26 billion in January of 12, up from $23 billion in December of 11. So for me, it comes down to we need some smart, rational trade policy. We need to be doing something in an awful hurry. And it's going to take making sure that these people in D.C. and these people in the positions of power hear that we don't want this kind of trade deficit. You want a deficit to be angry about? Be angry about that. That's what we need to be angry about. You know what else we need to be angry about? No transportation bill. Here in Pennsylvania, the governor's own, Tom Corporate's own transportation commission says we need to spend a couple billion dollars to improve our infrastructure. What did he say in his last speech, in the State of the State speech? Well, it didn't take us, you know, it took us decades to get here, so, well, we're going to push it down a couple more decades before we address it so that we can have, well, I mean, like LIUNA. Like the laborers came out with a survival guide on how to survive a bridge collapse. Maybe that needs to be issued to every citizen who drives in this country. Not to mention a local transportation, nothing on the national level. The Hill just reported today that John Boehner's magical transportation bill that he was pushing has been abandoned. Why? No Republican support. Why aren't they supporting it? Pretty simple. They understand construction jobs. They understand it, man. Construction jobs mean putting people back to work, mean the economy starts moving again, and they can't have it. And they won't have it. Because that means that black guy in the White House might look good and get reelected. And the truth of the matter is Republicans are just flat dead wrong when it comes to jobs. Everything that they promote is just dead flat wrong. I mean, because if you go back to the Bush years. We did. They had complete and total control. They passed through their tax cuts. They deregulated. They did everything they wanted to do. And the economy didn't turn around. I lived through it, man. It was not a smoking time. And they're just wrong. I mean, if we were to take, and look, these latest job numbers show construction jobs are down. At a time when we need things rebuilt more than ever, construction jobs are down. Why? No transportation bill. No federal programs to say, hey, look, let's get people back to work. Now, you got the service sector who's picking up jobs, and, you know, those aren't the highest paying jobs on the planet. And in fact, you may remember me talking about the situation in Florida where you had that one Florida, I forget what her name was, Florida legislator. She stood up and said, we were being brave and bold and statesmanlike for wanting to cut waitresses and waiters' wages. That's bold. That's brave. That's being a statesman. And I love, you know, this restaurant association chief executive, this Carol Dover, who said that, well, she doesn't know if her group's going to try and pursue that bill again because it's stalled in the Senate. But, you know, we need to make sure we keep the restaurants competitive and keep the minimum wage in check. Because that minimum wage, you know, it makes costs go up. What I don't understand about the bill that she was talking about is the trade-off between gutting their minimum wage in Florida and dropping it from $4.95 down to $2.03 an hour, which is the federal wage that waiters and waitresses are guaranteed. They were going to guarantee that they make $9.98 an hour. Again, I'm just not getting it. But here again, it's all about how to screw the working people, and especially those people at the bottom. Those service sector people. And I love her rationale. We're going to talk about it a little bit later because it's kind of hysterical that, you know, that she thinks that waiters and waitresses are going to be obsolete. Well, we're going to have iPads and iPhones and people will just, you know, they'll mechanize. And she's probably right because they've already got us trained to do it at the supermarket. Anyway, your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-RICK. 7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're right back with Isaiah Poole from the Campaign for America's Future. Stick around.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show. You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. IBEW President Ed Hill says the ongoing Wisconsin struggle to reassert public worker collective bargaining rights and recall the Republican governor who took them away is a critical struggle for the whole national trade union movement.
As far as I'm concerned, the trade union movement owes a debt of gratitude to the people of Wisconsin. What the people in Wisconsin are doing right now is critical to the trade union movement and what they've been doing for the last year.
And in this highly charged political election year, Hill says he's trying to get a vital message across to his members and other workers about the coming presidential election.
In my opinion, if labor isn't fired up behind President Obama, we got a real problem on our hands. And we're trying to get our membership to understand that while we're not really satisfied 100% with President Obama, he has been there for us in a number of ways. And we need to stick with somebody that at least we can talk to.
Wisconsin unions and progressive allies are planning a big rally this Saturday at the Capitol in Madison and other pro-labor activities throughout the weekend. Teamsters President Jim Hoffa says the federal government's claim that allowing Mexican trucks to have free rein on U.S. roads won't affect Teamster truck drivers is bizarre. The Teamsters have sued the government over allowing the Mexican trucks. The suit claims violations of several existing laws, including safety regulations. The case has been consolidated with a similar lawsuit filed by the Owner-Operator Independent Drivers Association. Hoffa says opening the border to low-paid truck drivers in dangerous, dirty trucks harms Teamster drivers and endangers the American driving public. The productivity of workers in the United States is starting to slow. Jesse Russell reports.
New numbers from the Labor Department suggest employers may soon need to start hiring more employees because current employees are reaching their peak productivity. The output of workers only increased by 0.9%, down from a gain of 1.8% over the previous 3 months. Meanwhile, expenses per worker jumped 2.8%. This means employers may have hit the ceiling for squeezing more work out of employees instead of bringing on more workers. Typically, when productivity starts to slow, employers need to start bringing on more employees, which would be a plus for the economy. The U.S. saw 2 months of payroll gains, and many economists project that trend will continue when January numbers are revealed.
This is what democracy looks like, Wisconsin's Worker Uprising, a one-hour radio documentary produced by Workers Independent News in conjunction with WORT. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
He is now turning me into an unofficial Southerner, and I'm learning to say y'all, and I like grits, and strange things are happening to me.
Something strange happening to me, he says. Like you stop using the G at the end of words, and I don't know. I like grits. Trees are the right height. I wonder if the trees are the right height in Alabama. I wonder if somebody should ask him that question. The guy cracks me up. Anyway, welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. And, you know, looking at Romney, I mean, his flip-flop on the minimum wage, it just kind of leaves me shaking my head going, what else could it possibly be? I mean, he has flopped and then flipped back and flopped back several times on just about every issue, so I'm not surprised. But it is really what the GOME is all about. And you go back and you think about where we've come from, and I was going through some of my clips today, and I came across a couple of FDR clips that I just completely fit in this whole, in what's going on right now.
Back in 1932, they raised their hands in horror at the thought of fixing a minimum wage or maximum hours for labor. They never gave one thought to such things as pensions for old age or insurance for the unemployed.
Well, they're thinking about it a lot now, thinking about how to destroy it, destroy the minimum wage, get rid of those pesky labor laws, those pensions, we want to steal them back, and unemployment, they're working to destroy that everywhere. So I guess things have changed a little bit in the 80 years since then. Just amazing stuff. Anyway, I've got our good friend Isaiah Poole on the line from the Campaign for America's Future. Ourfuture.org is the website. We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Isaiah, thanks for taking time for me, brother.
Appreciate it.
You know, I look at this clip of FDR saying, you know, they don't want the minimum wage. They don't want any of the progress that we've had. And you look 80 years later, they're still fighting against it.
Exactly right. And by the way, Rick, I just picked myself up off the floor. There is a story that I saw it on the Huffington Post. It will probably be on a few other websites as well regarding a statement that Ms. Mitt Romney made about China. And it actually ties into what you just said, because in response to a question about regulation and how regulation is holding down business, he cites China as a good example of what we should become. Quote, it's pretty impressive over there how quickly they can build things, how productive they are as a society. You should see their airport compared to our airports. There are highways, there are train systems. They're moving quickly in part because the regulators see their job as encouraging private people. It's amazing.
Their regulators.
I was just stunned.
Nothing to do with government investment, does it?
As nothing to do with government investment. It has nothing to do with the fact that China is a planned economy, where they have set strong economic priorities and have made they have spent tax dollars in accordance with the economic priorities. And, oh, by the way, the price of this, the way they do it in China, is the fact that the workers don't have the kinds of salaries and working protections and environmental protections that our workers do.
Yeah, but they will, Isaiah, they will. They'll have the exact same things we have, because we're going down that route. We're going to be down with them very soon, and that's where the Romneys and the GOME want to take us. And I would correct one thing. It's really not their tax dollars that's investing in their country. It's our dollars. It's all of this massive trade deficit we've got that's funding their buildup.
Well, that's a good correction. The point I was trying to make, though, is that, you know, their government made some very conscious decisions, and the machinery of government moves in that direction, very much facilitated by the fact that most of our supply chain is in their country.
Yep.
And they therefore have the resources to invest in their infrastructure.
Yeah, and I look at this, and it's interesting that you bring this up, because I remembered a Washington Post headline. I think it was Monday I saw it. The headline read, "Highway bills pitched by lawmakers as job generators, but are they really? Economists say no." And I go, wait a minute. Even Stephen La Tourette, a Republican, a rock rib right, a Republican from Ohio, is saying, hey, 42,000 jobs for every $1 billion we invest in infrastructure. They know it.
Actually, I'm glad you brought that article up, because I did a takedown of that article. It was actually a fairly shoddy piece of journalism. And if you recall the article, they based that conclusion on just two economists, one center right and one far right.
Both Koch brother approved, I'm sure.
Both Koch brother approved, and I thought that was stunning. I mean, if you look at if you talk to people over the place like Economic Policy Institute, which is a labor-backed economic think tank that is widely respected, they have done reports that show the job creating potential of infrastructure investment. These things are jobs programs. And more than jobs programs, they provide the foundation for future economic growth. So you can't have efficient, you can't have a really growing economy without investment in moving goods and people efficiently, which is why China does have good airports, and China does have a good rail system, and China does have good highways.
Well, they're working towards it. You know, I remember not too long ago, Thomas Friedman, and I've used this example numerous times because it speaks volumes to what's going on in this country. He said he had flown from Beijing to LAX, and he said it was like coming from the Jetsons to the Flintstones. And, you know, you look at this and you go, this nation used to have world-class, top-of-the-line, high-tech everything. We used to invest to the best technology we could get. Now it's all about giving what we can to the billionaires so that we can have the most billionaires.
Yeah, which is why this statement that Romney has just made is just boggles my mind how a person of intelligence would make that kind of statement.
This is what he believes.
Well, I mean, yeah, but how, I mean, my goodness, he certainly, with a statement like that, he certainly didn't get to be in the elite based on his understanding of world economics. Reality is that this is not some sort of free, this is not some sort of some private enterprise paradise. This is not what conservatism looks like. China is really sort of a mishmash of command and control, government economy, with a little bit of oligarchy thrown in and some other things.
Yeah, but if you're the one benefiting from Isaiah, you know, if you're that 1% who's, you know, you're heavily vested over there and you're making a nice return, you're all in favor. If you're Jack Welch or you're Jeffrey Imelt and you see the future of your company being China, 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 as they've said, you're all in favor of it. And that's the Romney crowd.
They are in favor of the fact that they can take advantage of the fact that China doesn't have the same sort of regulations to protect workers and the environment as we do here in the United States. And therefore, they can take those costs and allow the workers to bear those costs, the people to bear those costs. So the people suffer from the pollution. And from the stresses of having to work 12 hours a day with pay.
Look, at the end of this, I look at the Foxconn facility. You look at that, and we're learning bits and pieces a little bit more and more every day about what goes on the place where they make the iPhones and all that stuff. They have got suicide nets in the stairwells because people are jumping to their death. It's that bad. That's what they want to import here.
Which is, I think that's what Mitt Romney was thinking about a few weeks ago when he said that if our safety net was broken, we could repair it. Remember that comment?
Yeah, absolutely. And you look at our safety net, and, you know, there's this frame out there, and you've written a nice piece over at ourfuture.org about this frame that the righties keep throwing out, that the cons keep throwing out, that welfare reform worked. It was a wonderful thing. Welfare got people off the welfare rolls and into jobs. And I'm saying, and at the time I said it was a failure, and it's been a failure. I'm curious what your thoughts are.
Well, I've been, Greg Kaufman, who's a good friend of ours, has been writing over The Nation, and he's been doing this for several weeks now, been chronicling the impact of our welfare policies around the country. And we've been picking up his stuff, and I think the post that he wrote today was particularly good, which is why I highlighted it on our blog at ourfuture.org. You know, essentially he pointed to a report that said that the people who are living in abject poverty, that is on less than $2 a day, more than doubled from the time of welfare reform in 1996, more than doubled. And even if you factor in what's commonly known as food stamps, and now it's now the SNAP program because it functions on debit cards rather than paper food stamps. But even if you factor those in, there's been about close to a 70% increase in the number of people who are in abject poverty. And the reason is that welfare reform looked as if it was working in the late 1990s when there were plenty of jobs available and you could say to a single mother, you know, there's at least a low-wage job that you can go to. There are governments, state local governments, had lower-level jobs that they could offer people who are on welfare. There was a pipeline of programs for training. All of that began to disappear in the Bush era. And pretty much what didn't disappear in the first half of the Bush era was finished off in the economic crash.
Right. But here's the thing, and this is where I guess I disagree with the position that welfare reform was a failure. It was a failure for people like you and me. For the people who are out there touting this, it was a wild success because this is what they want. They want a desperation class. They want people at the bottom to look so us in the middle can look down and go, I don't want to be there. I'm going to continue to take these crummy jobs. I'm going to continue to take the guff at work and I'm not going to get out of line. I'm not going to question. I'm just going to keep my head down and hopefully they don't recognize me and I don't end up, like those poor folks. And I'm a firm believer in it. This is exactly what they wanted. They wanted a desperation class, and they've got it.
Well, the thing about the situation of Foxconn, this is what strikes me about the situation of Foxconn, and the reason that people who work at Foxconn don't complain so much about the conditions is that, in fact, the conditions at Foxconn and the pay that they get at Foxconn is actually better than the virtually nothing that they came from. But, you know, the fact that that is better than nothing shouldn't be enough.
Yeah, I love the ILO's response when they came out and said, well, it's better than the garment industry. Like that's somehow better.
Yeah, I mean, so well, I think what we need to do, one of the things that we need to push is a global standard for workers' rights and workers' protection.
Yeah, but don't you think you should have done that with your trade agreements? I mean, isn't this where you do that kind of stuff, where you don't put your workers at a disadvantage with everybody else, as we have done?
Well, I'd be exactly right. I mean, trade should be a win-win situation. And there is enough wealth in the world to make sure that we don't profit off of the backs of the Chinese people. The Chinese people don't profit on our backs. We can both rise together with good trade deals, with rules by which everyone is playing fairly. But what we have now we haven't really seen that in decades. And so we got to fight for it.
Absolutely. But, you know, here again, that would take an active, informed electorate to vote for candidates who are going to say, as John McCain's campaign said, country first. And that's what I want in trade. I want you to think country first, not CEO and corporations first. Pretty simple stuff. Isaiah Poole, Campaign for America's Future, ourfuture.org, the website. I appreciate the time. As always, thanks so much. Have a great weekend, bud.
You too.
All righty. And, you know, I look back at this, and trust me, history about to repeat itself. And, like I said, I was running through some of my FDR clips, and, you know, I want to go out with this one. You know, stop and think about the good old days.
Yes, back in 1932, those leaders were willing to let the workers starve if they could not get a job. Back in 1932, they were not willing to guarantee collective bargaining. Back in 1932, they met the demands of unemployed veterans with troops and tanks.
Yep. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're fine. You're gone.
together. The Rick Smith Show.
The corporate propensity for rationalizing the irrational in the pursuit of profit appears to be boundless. Consider J.R. Simplot, a giant conglomerate whose mining operations in Idaho had grossly polluted creeks with selenium, a highly toxic metal. But Simplot's scientists rationalized the corporation's dirty deed with a 1,000-page study, asserting that even though the selenium contamination of creeks was well above levels allowed by environmental law, the water remained, quote, safe for fish. Tucked back in the appendix of Simplot's study, however, were a few photographs that vividly depicted the screaming irrationality of the corporation's safety claims. The most stunning photo was of a two-headed baby trout produced by Simplot's pollution of area creeks. It was not the only sickening deformity caused by the selenium. Other trout had facial, fin, and egg disfigurements. These grotesque mutations led to calls for an independent agency to conduct a full scientific review of Simplot's 1,000-page study. At Senator Barbara Boxer's request, this was done by the Fish and Wildlife Service, which issued a scathing report in January that bluntly branded the corporate study biased. For example, Simplot systemically understated the deformity rate of baby fish in the creeks. It's not 20% that are deformed, but 70%. Ask about this rather broad discrepancy, a Simplot vice president could only grunt that the Fish and Wildlife Review was, quote, totally outside the regulatory process. Well, thank goodness for that. As another independent toxicology expert says, I have seen lots of malformed baby fish, but never one with two heads. We need to be careful here. This is Jim Hightower saying, yes, let's. In fact, let's stop swallowing any irrational rationalization by corporations that pollute for profit.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Come all ya good workers, good news.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Also, if you missed any portion of the program, you can download the podcast at the website. Or if you've got a smartphone, you can get the Stitcher app and take the program on the go. So, yeah, in the Florida Senate, this minimum wage bill has kind of taken a dive. And this state senator, Nancy Dietert, she's the one who said, well, you know, it would be bold and it would be brave and statesmanlike if only we were to, well, if we would gut the minimum wage for these people. These waitresses and waiters, these people who on the federal level we say are only worth $2.03 an hour. While in Florida they said, you know what, it's at least $4.95. But what I have the question about the bill is they're guaranteeing, and this is kind of one of those things that makes me go, oh, well, hold on, where's the scheme in this? Because it's got to be somewhere. They're guaranteeing $9.98 an hour. So that would seem to me to be kind of a minimum wage. So if you're advocating for making sure that everyone makes $9.95 an hour, why do you want to destroy the $4.65 minimum wage? Just a quick thought. I mean, and you think of it for yourself. There's a screw job in here somewhere. And I love what the woman has to say from the Restaurant Association, the yearly millionaire, Carol Dover. She has said, well, you know what's going to happen if we can't be competitive? What'll happen if we don't keep this minimum wage in check? Well, we're going to have restaurants go to iPads and to iPhones, and we will just do away with all those people. And it took me back to the moment where I was going to drown the guy in the hot tub over the weekend in Cleveland, telling me the reason he was in town is to get rid of that union, and they're taking a plant from Cleveland down to Texas. When you get more into the conversation, and like I said yesterday, it was all about the subsidies and mechanization. Here she's threatening, well, we'll just do away with those people. And my first thought is, well, okay, I can order on my iPhone, but is my iPhone going to bring me my dinner? Probably not. But, you know, that's their worldview, and they've already got us trained. I mean, you go to the supermarket, some people do. My family does not. But they do that self-checkout thing, which I just think is dumb. I'm not a cashier. Nobody's paying me to do it. I didn't save anything. But they're training us that we're going to be workers for everybody. We're going to be doing free labor for everyone. And this is, well, just another one of those moments. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, Rick Bloomingdale of the Pennsylvania AFL CIO talking about the voter screw job going on here in Pennsylvania. Like, we don't have any other problems. We need to deal with how to suppress the vote and how to take rights away from people. Right back. Stick around.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Earth, sky.
Today, the world's loneliest whale.
Whales are social animals, and it's their songs that keep them connected across the vastness of our planet's oceans.
The story of one unique whale is a sad one. This whale, of an unknown species, has been swimming the seas for years, ostracized from its own kind. The reason is its song. The whale sings in a sound frequency that's so high, no other whales will respond.
This loneliest of whales caught the attention of the U.S. Navy in 1989 when their instruments picked up the odd frequency of its song. Similar whales, like blue whales, sing between 15 and 25 hertz, frequencies like the lowest notes on a piano. But this whale sings at 52 hertz, a frequency that's about 8 notes on a piano higher. Here's the song of the 52 hertz whale. Notice its rapid rhythm.
Now listen to the deeper and more languid blue whale song. No one knows why the whale has this communication disability. It could be a hybrid of two different species, forging a unique song that no whale has used before. One scientist has suggested that the lonely whale could be the last survivor of an unidentified species, roaming the oceans in a doomed search for another of its kind.
Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
The billionaires don't want you to vote this year. We'll send you a message that's loud and clear that the votes can't be counted in your community. Why even register? Don't waste your energy. Don't go to the polls on election day, because we bought the election and it better go our way. And on election night, we'll sit back and glow.
You know that. They did. They bought it. I mean, stop and think about all of the money going into this election cycle. It's absolutely mind-blowing. And it's not even a small fraction of the billionaire class's wealth. I mean, that's what's really just destroying me, this idea that just a mere fraction of their wealth can completely dominate our discussion. And, you know, I go back to this whole attack on voters' rights. This is not new. Like I said earlier, I was going through some of my FDR clips, and well, here he is talking to the Teamsters back in 1940. Well, evidently not. But he said, look, you know, what they want to do is they want to hold down the vote. They want to make sure that you don't have the ability to get out and participate. Here he is.
They are, of course, perfectly willing to let you vote unless you happen to be a soldier or a sailor of the sea or a merchant seaman carrying the munitions of war. In that case, they've made it pretty hard for you to vote at all. But there are some political candidates who think that they may have a chance of election if only the total vote is small enough.
That's what's going on right now. That's exactly what's, in my opinion, what they're doing. It's all about suppressing the vote, keeping it down, because when they have the chance to keep the votes down, they know they got a better shot. Anyway, I've asked Rick Bloomingdale, president of the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO, who's doing the national media tour, to come talk to us about this voter harassment. Rick, thanks for taking time for me.
No, my pleasure, Rick. It's always good to be on the show.
You know, I look at this, and to me, it's a distraction, in my opinion. A distraction telling me the Republicans have no idea how to govern or how to fix the economy, but they need a shiny thing in the room to keep us at each other's throats.
Well, you know, as the economy gets a little bit better, and we did see some job creation, clearly we need to do better. But when they're not creating jobs, because they can't, they don't know how, as you said, they've got to focus on something else. So they bring up these other issues. Plus, they know that if people don't vote, they win. If people vote, they lose. That's been the big problem. That's why one of the reasons Rick Santorum was defeated in 2006, because seniors didn't like his idea to privatize Social Security, so they voted. So what's their answer isn't, oh, maybe our ideas are bad. Their answer is, let's get fewer people to vote.
Absolutely.
And they saw that in 2010, of course, when fewer people voted, we lost some really good progressive politicians, and we elected some really right-wingers, and hopefully we'll have a higher turnout again this year. But they're going to do everything they can to keep people voting, because if their ideas don't sell in the marketplace, change the marketplace. Don't change your ideas.
That's a perfect frame for it, because, you know, I look at this, and the whole bill that they've put out makes really no sense to me, because I don't see that there's a problem. If there were a massive problem, like every time I get a robocall, it says the wrong day, or I see flyers telling me that, oh, we moved voting to a week from now. I don't see anything that says we should stop that. I just see that we need to kick Granny off the rolls. I saw on Tuesday, Super Tuesday, 86-year-old World War II vet from Ohio has been voting in the same place for 40 years, was denied access to the vote because his veteran's ID card was not accepted in Ohio.
It's unbelievable what they're trying to do. And, you know, I've been voting in the same place for 23 years. And, you know, I go in there, my judge of elections knows me, I sign the thing, we have voter ID. I sign, she matches it to my signature, and off I go to vote. So, I mean, we have good things in place, and every case that they've brought up in terms of Acorn and, you know, oh, somebody filled out Mickey Mouse and the voter registration form. Well, the law requires that anybody doing voter registration, it's a government document, you must turn it in.
Yep.
So it's caught in every instance of voter fraud, if there has been, and I don't think there has been in 30 years in this state, has been prosecuted. So the laws work. So we have plenty of protections. What they're trying to do, and I've just been going back and forth in an email exchange with someone who got our legislative update, which talked about voter suppression, and it was great. She made my case for me because she talked about, well, you know, people should have an ID. It's not that hard to go to the DMV and get one. And my whole point is, even if she talked about free transportation, but it's a barrier. It's one extra step you have to do to vote. And that's against the whole concept of America, which is to make sure that as many people who want to vote can vote. It's not about voter suppression. It's about voter expansion. When your ideas are failing in the marketplace of the voting booth, change the marketplace. And you mentioned they've tried to do that through false, moving the polling places, trying to change the hours, shortening, you know, early voting, all the things they can do to keep people from voting, because they know when voters vote, they lose. And if they can keep the voters from voting, they can win.
Yeah. I stop and I look at Iraq, for instance. We have spent trillions of dollars giving the Iraqi people the right to vote. And in fact, I remember how proud the Bush administration was that, you know, all these people holding up their fingers because they got the vote and all the participation, and they wanted and encouraged and got people out and were, you know, just thrilled. Hey, 98% of the people voted. Yet I see the same party who's saying that in Iraq they should be free to vote and there shouldn't be barriers. That's the same party here who says, well, you guys have not enough barriers.
And it's the same party who also says that unions are good in other countries and unions aren't so good over here. Ronald Reagan was a big supporter of the labor movement Solidarity in Poland as they tried to overthrow the communist government. but went on to try to break unions here and actually created an atmosphere for busting unions. So hypocrisy is nothing new to the right wing. It's always been their trade, and I'm sure it'll continue to be as we fight these issues one step at a time.
You listen to the Rick Smith Show here with Rick Bloomingdale, president of the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO. You know, I look at this, and boiling it down to the lowest common denominator, I look at the crime, and I say, okay, let's say there was somebody out there who woke up and said, you know what, I am going to commit voter fraud today. I'm going to take my one vote, and I'm going to go and pretend I'm someone else. I look at the penalty for doing that just seems way out of line for the crime. So to me, it doesn't make any sense that you would have people doing it.
Yeah, it's you're right. I mean, it would have to be some kind of massive attempt to change the polling place. And, of course, you know, they did it in Florida. They tried to change the counts, and, you know, because of some mistakes with the ballots, they were able to manipulate the election down there. But, you know, it would have to be some kind of massive fraud. And instead, you know, this is it again, going back to what we said earlier, this is the modern day, this is the 21st century poll tax. That's all this is. It's another barrier to voting. And that's what they're trying to do, is to keep us from voting, keep us from turning out, keep us from moving this country forward.
You know, there are people like you and me, people who have to get up and go to work every day, folks who have the means. And a lot of my friends, they say, well, it's not a big deal. I got the license in my wallet. Had to have it anyway. It's no problem just to whip it out. And there's some logic to that, and part of me agrees with it. But I think about my grandmother, who has not driven it in at least 12 years. She doesn't have a photo ID of any type because, you know, when I was home over the weekend, I checked. She has been going. She's lived in the same house for 45 years. The same polling place, 45 years. Are you now saying that those 45 years of her going to that place, she's not going to be able to vote because she wasn't able to get downtown during a certain hour of a certain day to get some type of an ID? I mean, it makes absolutely no sense when you look at it through those frames.
Well, the problem is your grandmother might vote against privatization of Social Security, so they don't want her to vote. They want to erect a barrier like going down, even if it's free, and they say, oh, everybody will be able to get this free ID. But that means you have to go somewhere. If you're a senior, and this disproportionately hits seniors, if you're a senior living in a home and you've surrendered your driver's license, you don't get out much, could you get on a bus, a free bus, and go down to the DMV that's, like you said, only open certain hours? And by the way, it was huge battles to get polling places to open after 5 o'clock. You know, they used to be open 9 to 5 when we were all working, right? That was the whole point. Keep us from voting. There have always been attempts to keep workers from voting, or seniors, or folks who try to move this country forward. The 1% have tried to control this process for so many years. And I know some of the folks, they're saying there's a vast right wing conspiracy. And, you know, there is. These guys don't want us to vote. It's as simple as that. They couldn't pocket Social Security. They couldn't take our money and run it into the ground. So, what do they do? They can't change their ideas, or they can't realize, oh, maybe we failed. Maybe we need to come up with a better idea. Change the marketplace. Let's change the number of people who vote. That's what this is about. It's about failed ideas that the people reject. So they want to change the number of people who come out to vote.
But you know, Rick, there are some that I've talked to who think this is a new idea, that, you know, well, this is a new problem, and it's a new phenomenon. It's something we have to stop, and they've really blown it up. And I guess this has to do with right wing media, who pretty much control most of the media that people see, hear, and read, because it's owned by a handful of for profit big corporations. And you look at this and you say, look, it's not new. I remember back in high school, and I've told this story thousands of times, of my high school civics teacher saying, look, don't bother to vote. Stay home. This way my vote is stronger. That mentality has been taken to an institutional level where they're now saying, we don't want you to vote, and we're going to put every roadblock in place to make sure it doesn't happen. And I look here in Pennsylvania, I got to be honest, I thought never. Here in the cradle of liberty and democracy, the home of the Liberty Bell and the Constitution, never did I think I'd see this.
Well, unfortunately, they've been trying to do voter suppression. You mentioned some intimidation tactics in Philadelphia. You know, there have been people who have gone down in dark suits and sunglasses and cameras and started photographing African Americans in line and trying to intimidate voter. So there's always been, and again, you know, back in post-Civil War America, hundreds of thousands of freed slaves all of a sudden have the right to vote. Southern whites, Democrats, by the way, it was the Democrats who were doing the voter suppression, not.
Yep.
They didn't. It would have upset the status quo because they would have started electing African Americans who tended to be Republican because of Abraham Lincoln doing the emancipation. So how did they stop themselves from losing power? They kept the status quo by creating poll taxes and literacy tests because, unfortunately, it had been a crime to teach a slave to read. So if you said, oh, read a passage from the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution, of course they couldn't.
Right.
And then they couldn't vote. And the Supreme Court, unfortunately, back in the 1860s and 70s, upheld that concept that the states had the right to set the limits on voting. So, you know, you're right. This is not new. It's about fear. Every time the status quo is challenged, they're going to try to erect barriers to voting. That's what this is about.
Let's talk about this bill here in Pennsylvania. I guess Monday is going to be another vote in the House.
Yeah, concurrence on the bill that the Senate passed.
So there's still opportunity to contact your representatives and say, hey, no, not here.
Absolutely. You got to call your representatives, tell them vote against this, vote no on concurrence. That's how they call it. Vote no on concurrence on House Bill 934. This is a bad bill for Pennsylvania. It's a bad bill for seniors. It's a bad bill for veterans. It's a bad bill for anybody who doesn't have a driver's license, which is hundreds of thousands of people. Everybody thinks,
especially
because I have
cities.
One, that everybody does, and that's not true.
Especially in big cities where you wouldn't need one because you've got public transportation. You know, in part of this bill, and maybe you're up on this a little better than I am, I was told that if you come to the polls and you don't have your ID, that they'll be more than happy to give you something called a provisional ballot. And that if you come in a week or so and you show your ID, they'll then count the ballot. And my first thought is, well, that's nice of you, but won't the election be over?
It will, and they're hoping there aren't enough of them, but there could be thousands. I mean, it could change. If they block enough people from voting by, you know, intimidating people, saying, no, you didn't vote, you didn't bring your ID, so you can't vote, do a provisional ballot. And by the way, it's just one more barrier because you have to go down and present yourself to the county registration office. Your polling place is closed, right? So if I'm a senior, right now, if I lived in my same house and I lost my license, I could walk to go vote, right? It's not that far. But it would take me a lot to get down to downtown Harrisburg to go into the voter registration office, present my ID, and say, please count my ballot. Again, it's just another barrier. They're just trying to keep people from voting. It's
Absolutely.
As simple as that.
30 seconds left. Last question. Does this create jobs?
Absolutely not. I don't know what kind of job it would ever create.
Well, again, you know, they keep telling us. I remember November of 2010, jobs, 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 laser-like focus. And here, another piece of legislation, taking up most of our time, not creating jobs. And I'm telling you, as I've been telling you for the longest time, they don't know how to govern. They don't know how to lead. They are taking us off the cliff. Call them. Tell them no, no, no. Not here, not now, not ever. In fact, we should be making voting open week-long, same-day registration, all of that. Quick break, right back. Stick around.
That's one place I won't be. I'll be working as long as my two hands are fit to use. I'll drink my beer in a tavern, sing a little bit of these working men.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
This is WFTE 90.3 FM Mount Cobb and W289 AU 105.7 FM Scranton, Pennsylvania. Listen to us throughout Northeast Pennsylvania or check us out on the web at WFTE.org.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. IBEW President Ed Hill says the ongoing Wisconsin struggle to reassert public worker collective bargaining rights and recall the Republican governor who took them away is a critical struggle for the whole national trade union movement.
far as I'm concerned, the trade union movement owes a debt of gratitude to the people of Wisconsin. What the people in Wisconsin are doing right now is critical to the trade union movement and what they've been doing for the last year.
And in this highly charged political election year, Hill says he's trying to get a vital message across to his members and other workers about the coming presidential election.
In my opinion, if labor isn't fired up behind President Obama, we got a real problem on our hands. And we're trying to get our membership to understand that while we're not really satisfied 100% with President Obama, he has been there for us in a number of ways. And we need to stick with somebody that at least we can talk to.
Wisconsin unions and progressive allies are planning a big rally this Saturday at the Capitol in Madison and other pro-labor activities throughout the weekend. Teamsters President Jim Hoffa says the federal government's claim that allowing Mexican trucks to have free rein on U.S. roads won't affect Teamster truck drivers is bizarre. The Teamsters have sued the government over allowing the Mexican trucks. The suit claims violations of several existing laws, including safety regulations. The case has been consolidated with a similar lawsuit filed by the Owner-Operator Independent Drivers Association. Hoffa says opening the border to low-paid truck drivers and dangerous, dirty trucks harms Teamster drivers and endangers the American driving public. The productivity of workers in the United States is starting to slow. Jesse Russell reports.
New numbers from the Labor Department suggest employers may soon need to start hiring more employees because current employees are reaching their peak productivity. The output of workers only increased by 0.9%, down from a gain of 1.8% over the previous 3 months. Meanwhile, expenses per worker jumped 2.8%. This means employers may have hit the ceiling for squeezing more work out of employees instead of bringing on more workers. Typically, when productivity starts to slow, employers need to start bringing on more employees, which would be a plus for the economy. The U.S. saw 2 months of payroll gains, and many economists project that trend will continue when January numbers are revealed.
This is what democracy looks like, Wisconsin's Worker Uprising, a one-hour radio documentary produced by Workers Independent News in conjunction with WORT. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Gotta find a way.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Or give us a call here, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. So, yesterday, the female members of the Democratic State Senate in Georgia got up and said, you know what? Actually, this was on Wednesday. Got up and said, you know what? We're not going to put up with this. This war on women. We're not going to put up with the attacks on women. And they walked out. Understand, in Georgia, the majority, the vast majority, white Republican men who have taken over the government there. And look, they want to go after and basically make women second-class citizens. And, you know, they're doing a pretty good job of it. And as I look at this, I'm taken back at this just blatant attack on women's rights. I mean, it started off with workers. It started, now it's with women. It's with education. You name it. Every step forward, we're seeing an attack. And, you know, I'm hoping there are people who are paying attention. I'm hoping there are folks who are saying, you know what? This party has completely lost me. I'm hoping that happens. And I look at this bill in Arizona. The Arizona State Senate passed a bill that, and I can't even believe this. So if you're a woman, again, understand, the GOME has nothing to do with, they want nothing to do with you. They've just passed a bill that would allow doctors, I can't believe this, to basically lie or to withhold information just for the purpose of preventing abortion. On Tuesday, they passed this bill that's going to shield any doctor from wrongful birth lawsuits. So let's say, you know, the doctor sees something on an ultrasound, or the doctor, you know, knows something's going on. But, you know, for instance, you know, there's a birth defect. He doesn't have to tell you, evidently, now. So if he doesn't tell you and you now have a child that is severely autistic or, you know, really deformed that you would have known, evidently in Arizona, that's okay. That's okay. I mean, it's kind of amazing to me that we're willing to now let government be God. You know, all of the right-wing attacks on government, all of the smaller, less intrusive stuff, where is it? Where is their belief in the truth? And they need to, you know, to make smaller, less intrusive government. And I'm with them. There is tyrannical government. There is tyrannical rule. And it's when the right wing, when these cons, when they control government. I mean, ladies, stop and think about this for a second. You're going to your doctor because you want their professional care. You want to make sure that everything is going well with your child. All the way through the gestation process, you want to make sure the prenatal care you're getting is top-notch. Well, what they're saying, and it's really mind-blowing to me, what they're saying is, if the doctor thinks that you might abort that child because there is a 90% chance that it's going to be seriously autistic, or there is a major chance that it's going to be born with all kind of problems, and you may abort that child, they don't have to tell you. Think about that. I mean, it's mind-blowing to me that we would even put up with this. And I'm hoping, again, you know, I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that women in this country, I don't care where you are on the abortion issue. When I see something like this, where I'm now giving the doctor I'm now allowing the doctor to say what I need to know instead of me going, well, is everything okay? And I'm going, oh, yeah, everything's fine. What else is that going to lead down to? Well, you know, doctor, how did my test results come? Well, gee, I don't really want to tell you because I don't want you not to pay the bill. Is that where we're heading next? Is this the kind of power we're giving? It's the free market, Rick, don't you know? It's scary stuff. And I look at this latest poll that's come out by the AP and GFK. The sad thing is they say the poll says Americans don't like the health care bill. They don't like Obamacare. Actually, it's split right down the middle. It's about half like it, about 45% like it, 46% dislike it, and the other ones I don't know. And some 47% say that the quality is going to get worse. You know, because they've been repeatedly told. It's been a drumbeat attack. And I'm amazed that it's only 47%. Because that tells me that there's a whole bunch more people out there who actually think for themselves and they're not the ones who are drumbeated to. They're not the ones who get their news from fake news on Fox, or they're not the ones who listen to the lint balls. But I look at this and I say, you know, yeah, they don't like it. And you know what? They also don't understand it. And I'm amazed that, you know, the number was 55%. I think it was something in that range. Don't understand it. And I'm kind of just scratching my head going, well, how do you not like something if you don't understand it? Right? I mean, and the reason they don't understand it is because they've been listening to the fake news, they've been listening to the drumbeat, they've been listening to the radical right wing, the megaphones of the mega rich, who are out there saying, oh, it's death panels. There are no death panels. I've asked. I'd like to be on one if there are. But there's not. But you look at what they're doing. death panels, yeah, sounds about right. Telling doctors that they're not going to be sued, the only mechanism you have to hold them accountable, they're okay if they don't tell you your child has some defect? Really? In this country? I worry. I absolutely worry. And while the megaphones of the mega rich, while the radical right is pushing this really bizarre agenda. And I look at one of the women against this Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. Her name's Mary Brown. She's one of the lead plaintiffs in a lawsuit against Obamacare. Turns out her husband her and her husband are filing bankruptcy. And you'll never guess why. Turns out she didn't have health insurance. Husband ran up almost $5,000 worth of debt. Now they're filing for bankruptcy. And, you know, she goes into this spiel because the L.A. Times did a story on it. She goes on to this spiel that, well, you know, you shouldn't have to be able to buy anything. You shouldn't have to, if it's beyond our control, well, it just happens. The government shouldn't have to tell me to do anything. Well, you know what? Here's my problem with people like her. Here's my problem with free riders like this woman. She's now filing bankruptcy. That means the services that she got go unpaid for. And that sounds great. Oh, okay, well, not paid for. No problem. Big problem. Because that means my premiums go up. That means my tax dollars go to covering her, the free rider. And the Republicans are the free ride party. You know, they used to be, and while I gave them respect for being at least the party of, I believe in personal responsibility, I believe in personal entrepreneurship, I believe in, they're not that party anymore. They're the party of hooray for me, screw you, and let you pay for it, because it's got to be free to me, baby. And the people over at the Operating Engineers had a great piece on this no rights at work agenda. Because they want to push in Minnesota something that they're calling the right to work out law. They want to put, since Minnesota's talking about the so-called right to work, they're saying, hey, we should have a right to work out. Right? Everybody should have a right to work out law. Yeah. There's no membership. Membership's voluntary, completely voluntary. Just like joining a union. Only, you know what, you don't have to pay for it. There's no membership fees, no restrictions, no restricted access. All the equipment's open to you. And, you know, those people who choose to pay, they're the ones who have to pay for it, and the shop owners. And they go, look, is that the way you want to go? I mean, is that what we should be doing? And obviously anyone who would look at this and go, no, the gym owner should be able to make a profit, and the people who go there should be able to, you know, they should have to pay something of a dues, you know, some kind of a membership. Well, yeah, same thing about being a member of a union. You should not get the benefits. You should not get the representation for free. But the free party, the free for me party, that's what they're all about. And it's not surprising that they've turned into this. It's not surprising that they've, you know, the same people who hand out billions and billions of dollars to these big corporations who end up paying no tax whatsoever. It's not really a surprise to me that they then turn around and look at poor people and say, well, we're taking your food stamps because GE or ExxonMobil, they need more. I mean, John Boehner actually had the audacity to say, well, you know what? Gas prices would go up if we stopped that $40 billion in subsidies to the oil industry that made $237 billion in profit last year. Oh, it would be just an economic hardship for the oil industry. So we need to take food out of the mouths of children. Yes, that's the way to go. Yes. Good God-fearing Christian nation. It's nuts. It's absolutely nuts. And on a certain level, you should have seen it coming. Because we've been talking about this for 6 years now. This has been the direction of the party. If you've been reading their rantings, and you read what their little think tanks come out with, and you listen to the dog whistle politic, and you listen to the doublespeak that comes out of their mouth, it hasn't changed.
The whole purpose of Republican oratory these days seems to be to switch labels. The object is to persuade the American people that the Democratic Party was responsible for the 1929 crash and the Depression, and that the Republican Party was responsible for all social progress under the New Deal. Now, imitation may be the sincerest form of flattery. But I am afraid that in this case it is the most obvious common or garden variety of fraud.
Absolutely. Best word, I gotta tell you, best word for it, fraud. And that's what the GOME is. Quick break, right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
With my microphone, I do a super show. I wear a cowboy hat. It is my business hat. I'm up to 1 a.m. I must tell you that I'm a man with a mission.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
The corporate propensity for rationalizing the irrational in the pursuit of profit appears to be boundless. Consider J.R. Simplot. A giant conglomerate whose mining operations in Idaho have grossly polluted creeks with selenium, a highly toxic metal. But Simplot's scientists rationalized the corporation's dirty deed with a 1,000-page study, asserting that even though the selenium contamination of creeks was well above levels allowed by environmental law, the water remained, quote, safe for fish. Tucked back in the appendix of Simplot's study, however, were a few photographs that vividly depicted the screaming irrationality of the corporation's safety claims. The most stunning photo was of a two-headed baby trout produced by Simplot's pollution of area creeks. It was not the only sickening deformity caused by the selenium. Other trout had facial, fin, and egg disfigurements. These grotesque mutations led to calls for an independent agency to conduct a full scientific review of Simplot's 1,000-page study. At Senator Barbara Boxer's request, this was done by the Fish and Wildlife Service, which issued a scathing report in January that bluntly branded the corporate study biased. For example, Simplot systemically understated the deformity rate of baby fish in the creeks. It's not 20% that are deformed, but 70%. Ask about this rather broad discrepancy, a Simplot vice president could only grunt that the Fish and Wildlife Review was, quote, totally outside the regulatory process. Well, thank goodness for that. As another independent toxicology expert says, I have seen lots of malformed baby fish, but never one with two heads. We need to be careful here. This is Jim Hightower saying, yes, let's. In fact, let's stop swallowing any irrational rationalization by corporations that pollute for profit.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, rick@therickSmithShow.com, or give us a call here, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Got a tweet during the break. E. Smith 1961 sent me. He lived in Virginia, not PA, and we voters found out thanks to the Penn Hills School District. He's talking about Tricky Ricky Santorum, and I said that the other day. You know, everyone keeps saying, oh, the senator from Pennsylvania. No, he was the third senator from Virginia. Because again, what he wanted, talking about the free-o-me, here they are saying, well, we shouldn't have to pay for anything. We want it for free. Education for his kids? Well, the Penn Hill School District got to pay for it while he lived in Virginia. And he saw nothing wrong with all of the money that district spent educating his kids while he was a resident in Virginia. The free-o-me, that's it. That's the new name, I think. Everything for free, just for me, and the heck with you. And, you know, and speaking of Tricky Ricky Santorum, I got a laugh. He was at an event on the USS Alabama Battleship Park. He was out there, firing up the faithful. And, you know, him in his sweater vest, I swear he was pandering to the right-wingers. Pandering to the Southerners, you know, just kind of doing that, kind of hicking it up a little bit. Maybe not as bad as Romney. Listen to Romney.
He is now turning me into an unofficial Southerner, and I'm learning to say y'all, and I like grits, and strange things are happening to me.
Strange! I'm gonna put a gun rack in the back of my truck and drive around with a big flag with an X on it. Yeah, that's what I'm gonna do. But not as bad as that. But Santorum, you know, out there kind of hicking it up. He was talking about climate change, you know, and all those people with their knowledge and their education. I love this.
Yeah, you're looking for experience. You're looking for someone with a proven track record. When the climate changed about man-made global warming in this country, and everybody rushed to say, oh, we need to do something now about this huge problem, I didn't change. I stood tall and said, this climate science of man-made global warming was not climate science, it was political science.
Yeah, political science, see? Nice turn of a phrase. You know, when they were saying that, you know, the ozone layer is having a real problem and the climate's changing and the globe's heating up, I stood my ground because I'm a believer. I stuck my head firmly up my keister and I'm a believer. Which is why I love this James Inhofe. He evidently wrote a book, and you got to love his rationale why climate change isn't happening.
The Genesis 8:22 that I use in there is, as long as the earth remains, there will be springtime, harvest, cold and heat, winter and summer, day and night. My point is, God's still up there. And this is the arrogance of people to think that we, human beings, would be able to change what he is doing in the climate is, to me, outrageous.
It's outrageous. Outrageous! Outrageous to think that we could destroy this world. And I go in immediately, and I'm hoping your thought process goes here too. I'm immediately thinking, don't we have enough nuclear weapons to destroy the planet? Yes. Explain this to me, because they seem to believe that we can't do anything to screw up this because we believe. And this is really what's really bizarre about their ideology. Heaped in this belief that anything they do wrong, and you know, I grew up as a Catholic, and I remember the mentality, the concept of absolution, something I remember quite well. I could do anything I wanted wrong, anything, and all I had to do was show up at church and say, "I'm sorry," say a couple of Hail Marys, and of course, put a couple bucks in the pot, and voila, I am now forgiven. It's great. I love that. One of the things I like about Catholicism. I can do anything I want, and I am now, I'm absolved of all my sins. In fact, that's part of the spiel when you do the whole confession. I now absolve you of all of your sins. One of the great things about religion in general. It's beautiful psychology. The priest as the psychiatrist. You know, for a couple of bucks, your conscience is wiped clean. And, you know, I look at this people like Santorum and these radicals on the extreme right who believe they can do whatever they want to do because it's about freedom. It's about liberty, and my freedom and my liberty is, well, I can trash whatever I want. I can consume and destroy everything I want because I'm free. And what's amazing to me is that they have no concept of anyone else. It's all about the me. I mean, they are very much an id party, very much a selfish, childish party. Who I would hope, you know, if God is any type of a decent parent, would come down every once in a while and give him a backhand and say, you know what, in the line. But you know what? I see these people and they scare me, Matt. These crazy people who are out there touting their piety and how wonderful they are, they scare me. Because they're the same ones who are saying, hey, you women, the doctor doesn't have to tell you if there's something wrong because he knows better. And healthcare, you don't need it. We're not going to make sure that workers have healthcare or have retirement security when they get older. We're not going to make sure that children have the education. We're going to cut all of that. Why? So the upper crust, our billionaire class, well, they can have more because they're the job creators. Because you know what? They're going to have needs, and we're going to need to take care of them. That's what they're telling us. And, you know, I'm just, you know, it's one of those things that just makes you shake your head and go, you know, what's it going to take? Yeah, you know, I think of the Utah Phillips poem. You know, when he was talking about the two bums, he said, you know, the bum on the rods is hunted down as an enemy of mankind. The other is driven around and to his clubs, is vetted, wined and dined. And they who curse the bum on the rods as the essence of all that is bad will greet the other with a willing smile and extend a hand so glad. The bum on the rods is a social flea who gets an occasional bite, but the bum on the plush, he's a social leech, blood-sucking day and night. The bum on the rods is a load so light his weight is scarcely felt, but it takes the labor of dozens of folks to furnish the other a meal. As long as we sanction the bum on the plush, the other will always be there, but rid ourselves of the bum on the plush and the other will disappear. Then, make an intelligent, organized kick. Get rid of the weights that crush. Don't worry about the bum on the rods. Get rid of the bum on the plush. And, you know, you think about that, you go, the Romneys of the world, the wealth class, the people who weigh us all down. But, you know, it's that welfare mother who's struggling to keep food on the table. That's the enemy of the country, according to the Daryl Issas of the world, who had their little committee dance yesterday. Not as bad as the where they went after women, all the men there deciding on, you know, what the women folk are going to like and what they're going to be able to have. It just makes you want to scream, I think. And then you look at all of the right wingers saying, well, you know what? We need to make sure that the bum on the plush gets more and more and more. We need more tax breaks. You know, you look at Grover Norquist, probably one of the most powerful guys in this state. Don't even know if he's ever been to this state. He's got all of these representatives lined up with his stupid pledge, the taxpayer protection pledge, which basically says never, ever, ever, not even clinically, will you ever even consider war, famine, whatever, never disaster, never going to consider raising taxes on the 1%, on the wealth class in this country. Never. And there are some Republicans who have now turned around and said, hey, you know what, we just came out of a major crisis. Maybe, you know, there's a couple, not many, don't get carried away. There's a handful. And I wish there were more. I wish sane forces would take back the Republican Party. Because the polarization you're seeing in Washington, D.C. has very, very, very little to do with the Democrats. Has everything to do with these radicals from around the country. People like Joe Walsh, who's going to talk to us about fiscal discipline. Are you freaking kidding me? A guy who owes $117,000 in back child support. He's going to lecture me about what we need to do to keep our house in order? Are you kidding me? Where are the sane, rational Republicans? Where are you? This guy should have been ran out on a rail in any reasonable, if the Republicans really believed in what they stood for at one point, and you respected them at one point for what they stood for. Pay your bills, be responsible for yourself, help the community. I could have been one of those if they believed that stuff. But they don't. They believe it's about me. I should have more. Me, me, me. And you look where we're at as a nation. You look at the roads. I almost to tears when I went back home to Cleveland to see the infrastructure and the condition that it's in, to see the city and the condition that it's in. And why is it that way? Because we have fed the plush. We have fed these bums for way too long. Time for them to go out and get a job. You know, I often question, when was the last time they actually did an honest day's labor? See, the problem is we've taught people too long, well, you just move money from one pocket to the other. That's work. No, that's not work. Manipulating other people, getting other people to do work for you so that you benefit, that's not really work. But according to the GOME, those are the people to look up to. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. fellow working class heroes, I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Earth, sky.
Today, the world's loneliest whale.
Whales are social animals, and it's their songs that keep them connected across the vastness of our planet's oceans.
The story of one unique whale is a sad one. This whale, of an unknown species, has been swimming the seas for years, ostracized from its own kind. The reason is its song. The whale sings in a sound frequency that's so high, no other whales will respond.
This loneliest of whales caught the attention of the U.S. Navy in 1989 when their instruments picked up the odd frequency of its song. Similar whales, like blue whales, sing between 15 and 25 hertz, frequencies like the lowest notes on a piano. But this whale sings at 52 hertz, a frequency that's about 8 notes on a piano higher. Here's the song of the 52 hertz whale. Notice its rapid rhythm.
Now listen to the deeper and more languid blue whale song. No one knows why the whale has this communication disability. It could be a hybrid of two different species, forging a unique song that no whale has used before. One scientist has suggested that the lonely whale could be the last survivor of an unidentified species, roaming the oceans in a doomed search for another of its kind.
Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
At every trough you stop to feed. With your arrogance, your ignorance, and greed. Now here come the cuts and redundancy. Through the absolute indifference, the avarice, incompetence, your arrogance, your ignorance, your greed.
Oh, no such thing as greed. No, 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 no such thing as greed. You look at this MF Global, and gee, I wonder MF. And that's what I pretty much said. Despite having lost over $1 billion of their customers' money, the investment house MF Global, they're going to be paying their executives bonuses. Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that great? I'm so glad the Wall Street Journal told me that. Also, Bloomberg News had a story today, and you might want to check it out, that Wall Street bonuses this year, 20% increase. So hooray for them. The investor class is, well, they're fat and happy again. You and me, not so much. And, you know, I can't get my trip to Cleveland out of my head. You know, and the guy I wanted to drown in the hot tub. This idea that, you know, they're going to up and move a company from Cleveland down to Texas. And he really believed it was one of those union people were getting away from the union, when in reality it was how much money the state of Texas and the area gave them, the tax subsidies, all of that stuff. It's amazing to me. And I see this all across the country, this beggar thy neighbor, economic development, states stealing jobs from each other. It's nuts. And I saw this story over at Alternate Labor, written by Sarah Jaffe, and it just blew my mind. That's why I've asked Sarah to come talk to us about her story on Fresh Direct. Sarah, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You know, again, thanks for ruining my day. I'm looking at this going,
sorry.
Are you absolutely kidding me? You're going to give $129 million to a company that pays people, what, $8, $9 an hour? Is that smart? Is that job? I guess that's GOP job creation.
Well, it's independent job creation. I mean, Mayor Bloomberg, and it's Democratic job creation here in New York, because Andrew Cuomo signed off on this, and Ruben Diaz, the Bronx Borough President. So it's bipartisanship. This is what we get for bipartisanship, right?
Well, you know, I think that little fat kid on South Park, Cartman, Democrats piss me off. And it's just Really? Oh, you got to be kidding me.
Yes.
So we're given, the state of New York's given $129 million, as I understand it, and the state of New Jersey, I guess, gave $100 million, is that?
Well, the state of New Jersey offered them some money. And, I mean, this is a company, right? They deliver groceries to your door. So I've used them. A bunch of my friends have used them. When you're busy, you go online and you order your groceries, and they show up at a, you know, specific time. And they bill themselves on having, you know, local food and organic food and healthy stuff, and this is all great. Except they bring it up, you know, they drive around the city in these trucks. So they were going to somehow move to New Jersey. So they would have to be, you know, in the bridges and tunnels every day getting back and forth to the city where all their business is. So I don't know. It seemed ridiculous. But, you know, Bloomberg and Cuomo and Ruben Diaz all thought this was, you know, it was tragic if they got away to Chris Christie's New Jersey. And so threw $129 and some odd million dollars at them.
Again, you know, I look at this and I listen to the Romney of the world, and Romney's take on, well, you know, there's an attack on the free market, on the free market. I'm going, well, where's the free market?
It's
not free. It's costing me a fortune. It's costing taxpayers a fortune. It's not free for us.
Yeah, it's costing us a fortune, and they're claiming that it's creating jobs. And meanwhile, it's creating jobs that are paying people $25,000 a year, which if you've ever been to New York City, you know you can't live on $25,000 in New York.
You could barely pay the tolls to get into the city for that much.
You know, it's you can't live on it. So a lot of the workers who are at this company currently are using public health care. They're using government benefits just to get by. And these are the jobs we're subsidizing?
Yeah, but here's the thing.
Ridiculous.
Here's the thing, Sarah. And I'm looking at this, and I'm saying, did they really create jobs? I mean, did this $129 million that the state of New York and the city and the district, this $129 million that they gave, did it create jobs? Were these new jobs? Because I'm of the mindset, if this is a great product, this is a good company, they say it's they're worth hundreds of millions of dollars, those jobs are there anyway. Why did taxpayers need to subsidize it?
Well, yeah, I mean, they already have a facility, right? They're already in Long Island City in Queens, and they've already got about a couple thousand employees, give or take a few, and they've already got, well, low-wage jobs. The drivers make $8 an hour plus maybe tips if they're lucky. The warehouse workers make $8.50. Yeah, so these are the jobs that already exist, and they're claiming they're going to move to a bigger facility in the South Bronx because they need to expand. And once they move there, they're going to create another 1,000 jobs over the next 10 years. That doesn't say if that means there's going to be turnover, because, you know, with low-wage jobs that aren't union, there's usually a lot of turnover.
Right.
And they're only promising 30% of those theoretical 1,000 jobs that they're going to create in the next 10 years to the South Bronx.
Yeah, what they're going to do.
Fourth borough in the city, one of the, you know, 66% of the residents in the South Bronx are on some sort of either SNAP benefits or WIC benefits, some sort of food supplement from the government.
Well, you know what we do there. You know what we do there, Sarah.
No.
We can fix that. We can fix that.
Yeah.
We just take it away.
Oh God, yeah.
I mean, isn't that what we're being told? We need SNAP reform. We just take it away.
Mm.
Let those people starve.
Yeah.
And that is the mentality.
Oh yeah, and meanwhile, FreshDirect doesn't accept those benefits. So the same people who are going to be theoretically getting jobs and getting the benefit of having this company in their community, they can't use it.
Oh, I got to play the FDR clip.
Back in 1932, they raised their hands in horror at the thought of fixing a minimum wage or maximum hours for labor. They never gave one thought to such things as pensions for old age or insurance for the unemployed.
Now, that's the GOME. In fact, when those workers got up and they send in the troops. And I look at this and I go, you said something a second that almost made my head explode. You said that these drivers, the people who drive around the city of New York, get paid $8 or $9 an hour. Is that right?
Yeah.
No. No, I drove into Brooklyn for years. No. No, 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 no.
Yeah, and they're making, I spoke to Sandy Pope from Teamsters Local 805, who's been trying to organize these workers for years now. And she told me, yeah, they make about 20 to 25% less than even non-union drivers in the city.
And you've given them $129 million as a bonus. Here's a bonus. The taxpayers think you're such a good company, they're going to give you a bonus. And I look at this and I go, you know, no wonder we have economic problems in this country. No wonder. I mean, here again, you know, this is why I wish the first piece of legislation that Obama would have pushed, while I think Lilly Ledbetter was important, I think the Employee and Free Choice Act would have been much more important.
Yeah, well, right. Imagine how much better these jobs would be if these people could actually form a union. They've been getting, I mean, the article details all sorts of nasty things that they did to the workers. There was a surprise immigration and customs audit, which cost them 200 to 300 of their workers who didn't have documents. That just happened to come in right at the time that they were preparing for an NLRB election.
Oh, how cozy. But here's my take on this. This is where I think our laws are screwed up. Instead of going after those people, instead of raiding them, and they should be going after the CEO saying, why'd you hire them? Because I'm of the mindset, and every person that I've talked to who knows about immigration, who I consider an expert on the topic, they tell me that before people come to this country, they already have a job in place. They've got headhunters in these other countries say, you just make it up to New York there, you can work at that place, and they'll hire you.
Well, I mean, they depend on people having no support, right? They depend on being able to scare their workers by saying, oh, well, you know, we'll report you to immigration, right? That's how you get people working for $8 an hour. They're scared, and despite that, they still were trying to organize, right? I mean, that's pretty, you know, that takes guts. Your average person is, you know, I mean, how many people who are citizens who can't get thrown out of the country for trying to form a union still don't have the guts to try to organize?
Well, that's a good point. And as I've always said, people usually don't organize for wages. They organize for respect. They organize because of the conditions. And you know, I look around and I'm going, at some point, the explosion has to happen, because every time you turn around, these big companies are stealing back wages, they're stealing back health care, they're destroying and stealing pensions. At some point, don't you just get where you go, the heck with this, I've had enough.
Yeah, absolutely.
And now we're subsidizing the people who are going to bust up the unions and make working conditions for everyone that much worse.
Yeah, I mean, it's right, that's your downward pressure, right? You are getting immigrant workers to work for next to nothing, and everybody else is pressed downward to take less, and so on. It's just, you know, the ongoing low waging of this country, right? This is where we're heading. We're heading to $8 an hour jobs, and yeah.
And the thing that bothers me about this is this whole beggar thy neighbor economic development. And, you know, Jersey wanted to steal the jobs from New York, as your piece points out. And New York said, no, we'll give you a better deal. Just like they tried to do here in Pennsylvania with Harley Davidson. Kentucky was going to give them a whole boatload of money. And I said, no, we'll give you money. I mean, it's extortion by these corporations. What happened to the free market? I mean, we're the only country in the world dumb enough to beat ourselves senseless. Before we get into the international community, I mean, imagine if Mike Tyson was walking down the ramp to the ring, and every person in the stands who could punch him took a shot at him. Do you think he'd win many fights? That's what we're doing to ourselves.
Yeah. No, you can't argue that this is worth subsidizing, that $8 an hour jobs are worth subsidizing, that, you know, a company coming into a neighborhood that can't afford its product is worth subsidizing. It's ridiculous. You're not helping this neighborhood.
No.
You're not helping. You're certainly not helping these workers.
And you would think it's, you know, well, I guess you wouldn't. You know, I think of Cuomo, to me, not the best Democrat in the world, to be honest.
No.
But, you know, the reality is, and this is where you've got to hold bad Democrats accountable and throw them out. And if there are decent Republicans, and I keep praying for some sanity in the GOP, but not happening anytime soon.
Yeah, no. But, yeah, and the further right they go, the further right Democrats can go and still claim that they're the better option.
Yeah, and that's what scares me. The piece is how Fresh Direct delivers misery along with your groceries, and how workers in the communities are fighting back, by Sarah Jaffe, Alternate Labor. We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Sarah, it's always great talking with you. I appreciate the time.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks so much. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. I'm gonna die now.
to the Rick Smith Show.
It is believed that a little hard work is good for the soul. If this is true, then the history of child workers in the United States is a soulful tale. The first child laborers landed in Virginia in the year 1619. These immigrant children found slave working conditions and poverty wages in their new world. As the years passed, little changed. The average child worker toiled 16 to 18 hours per day, 6 days a week in factories and textile mills. Education was a luxury, and many believed a loss on working children. Charles Harding, president of the Merchants Woolen Company, stated, "There is such a thing as too much education for working people sometimes. I have seen cases where young people are spoiled for labor by too much refinement." Labor unions, consumer groups, and parent coalitions all work to shorten hours, ease conditions, and ultimately end exploitive child abuses. Baby strikes in Paterson, New Jersey, and Allentown, Pennsylvania, demanding 11 and 12-hour workdays, were fought vehemently by mill and factory owners. The Pennsylvania legislature was the first to consider prohibiting child workers in 1833. And consider is all Pennsylvania did until July of 1903, when Mother Jones led the March of the Mill Children from Philadelphia to Oyster Bay, New York, in an attempt to influence President Theodore Roosevelt. In 1836, Massachusetts was the first state to pass a law restricting the use of children in manufacturing. And 102 years later, the United States Supreme Court ruled the Walsh-Healey Act restricting the use of child labor as constitutional. Also in 1938, Congress passed the Fair Labor Standards Act, which put more stringent restrictions on the use of child labor. While hard work teaches discipline, self-reliance, and responsibility, the exploitive nature of our past must remind us that what we have today, we mustn't take for granted, for the days of tomorrow are doomed to repeat if we ignore those lessons hard learned. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can download the podcast there at the website. Or if you've got a smartphone, get the Stitcher app and take the program on the go. So I just got an email telling me that Scott Walker, governor of Wisconsin, has announced today that he has set up a legal defense fund to help pay for expenses incurred as a result of the John Doe investigation that he claims he is not the target of. Shall we start measuring his inseam for his prison garb? What do you think he'd look like in black and white stripes? Do you think he'll be comfortable at the Gray Bar Hotel? I hope so. I'm hoping that, you know, somebody will bake him cookies. Those nice people in Wisconsin, and I remember going there, you know, thinking, oh, I keep hearing the news, oh, there's chaos, there's trouble, those radicals, those union thugs. And I showed up and a woman handed me a cookie. I go, where are the thugs? Where are the radicals? I got a cookie. Another woman gave me a sweet potato. I'm going, really? It's like 15 degrees out here, and you're handing out hot sweet potatoes. Thank you. They had bratwurst. I mean, I got to be honest. I don't think I've ever eaten so well. And they're just handing it out here. It was amazing. But the mainstream corporate-controlled media, well, it's radicals and it's thugs and these anarchists they want to destroy. No, they wanted to fight for what they believe in. That's what it was about. And, you know, Sarah Joffe brings up an interesting point in her story about this grocery direct or whatever they're called. You got Democrats in this, who, you know, you expect from Republicans handing out tax dollars to corporations. I expect that all the time. But you got Democrats who are saying, okay, well, here's money, and we don't care what the labor conditions are. We don't care if they're going to be jobs. I mean, to me, that's another reason why we need people to vote for actual progressive candidates, pro-worker candidates. Not these DLC Democrats, not these corporate Democrats, because they're just as bad as Republicans sometimes. They're just a little less bad. They don't put sand in the Vaseline. You know, maybe that's better. But I look here, and I had a couple people send me emails on the attorney general race here in Pennsylvania. And it's really, I guess, come down to two main candidates. There's Patrick Murphy, and then there's this woman, Kathleen Kane. Turns out Kathleen Kane, as the Murphy campaign has pointed out, was an executive for the trucking company Kane is Able, a notorious anti-union, anti-worker corporation. In fact, very proud of it and has boasted about it quite openly. She's now running as a Democrat to be the attorney general. And I go, you know, here's a company that she was an executive of that has done everything they can possibly do to maintain that their workers don't have their rights. And we're going to put her in as an attorney general? I mean, does that make a lot of sense, Democrats? It's your party. Tell me about it. Because I got to be honest, I want somebody. To me, the Democratic Party should stand on firm principles. And the Republicans stand on their principles. And then you figure out how to make things work for people in those frames. Problem is the Republicans, they stand on more and more radical principles. They don't stand still. They keep moving to the extreme right. Because that's where the carrot's at. That's where the money's at. You got the Koch brothers and the billionaire class waving the dollars. Come on over here to the extreme right. Over here to the radical edge. Let's go to the cliff of disaster. Let's take it all the way. And Democrats, they kind of plod along, well, we've got to continue to give in. We've got to continue to make sure that, you know, we try and compromise. I mean, you look at this prevailing wage bills going through the state legislature here. Right now it's $25,000. Anything over $25,000 has to be bid out, has to be paid a prevailing wage. They want to jack that all the way up to $185,000. So that, you know, basically so that the politicians, their brother-in-laws will have work. That's what it's about, understand. And it's about breaking unions. Everything the radical right does, and this is what's amazing to me, why working people don't wake up to this. Because even if you're not a member of a union, they do bring the wages up. And they always have. They've always asked for a bigger slice of the profits. Now, when companies are struggling, they do give concessions because you got to keep the company going. You need to stay them. You need them employed. Now, the radical right will keep telling you, well, you see, it's those unions who shut companies down. And that's just ridiculous. Oh, those unions want to put people out of business. Absolutely ridiculous. Because if you put all these companies out of business, where do your members work? I mean, flawed logic on the radical right. Flawed logic our anti-worker people keep putting out there. But you want some of the profit. When times are good, you should do well. And I look at this attorney general's race. I personally want nothing to do with Kathleen Kane because I know a lot of the Kane is Able workers. I've met a bunch of them on the road over the years. And the tales they tell me, man. Does she support the Employee Free Choice Act? Does she support workers' rights? Will she go to bat for them? I mean, because here's the thing. I mean, it's one thing to have an attorney general who throws that out and says, well, yeah, legally it's the law. I guess it's important. Or someone who's going to say, we're going to make sure the law is followed. And I look at the NLRB as a perfect example. During the Bush years, they used the NLRB as a tool against workers. And most people don't know what the NLRB does. Most people don't even know their rights. Until their rights are violated and they realize, oh, gee, there's no one to stand up for me. But you look at the NLRB. They started doing what they're supposed to do and what they had done for decades, which is standing up for workers, being that mediator between. The Boeing case was it showed the system works. It got the people to the table. They negotiated. They dealt with it without government involvement. And that's what we should be pushing for. But the radical right, they want to inject government. You know, the people who tell you that, well, we need smaller, less intrusive government. What they're really saying is we need ineffective government. We need government that we can own, government that we can control and use how we see fit. I mean, stop and look at all of this contraception thing. This isn't about contraception. It's about putting women in their place and, moreover, about putting workers in their place. Because the Blunt Amendment went well beyond, just contraception and birth control, went well beyond that. Anything an employer finds morally unconscionable, they don't have to do. And to me, the response, and I've seen it from no one. I have seen no one take up the mantle, which should be, this is another reason why we do not need employer-based health care. This is another reason why the Kathleen Kanes of the world, who were these big executives of these anti-union companies, holding hostage the things that take care of us, why they shouldn't have that kind of control. You know what? I'm with you. You talk about the different groups who have their ideas. One of the things, portability of health insurance, portability of retirement. I'm all in favor of that. But how do you do it? How do you get there? I'm in favor of health care from cradle to grave. Same plan. You know why? Because there's going to be a major incentive for that health care plan to be a partner in keeping you well. Not just dealing with your sickness or dealing when accidents happen or being a cost when tragedy strikes. No, actually helping you to stay well, which means also lobbying for the food that we eat to be something of some nutritional value. Talking about environment so that we don't have corporations polluting, because someone's going to have to pay for that cancer that people get. Sadly, too much of what happens is we end up on the back of the taxpayer. We end up on Medicaid or Medicare. And the private insurance companies go, well, that's how we like it. We got to collect all of the premiums during the happy years and the productive years and the healthy years. We divvied it out amongst our wealthy friends. And the taxpayer, the government, they get to pick up, they get to pick up the bill when things are done. And I look at, diabetes, for instance. I think it was Krugman who pointed out 95% of all amputations due to diabetes, Medicare. Now think about this. If the for-profit corporation had a motive, and I don't care who it is, for-profit, non-for-profit, whatever, if they had a motive to keep you well, knowing that in 10 years your diabetes is going to cause you to lose a limb and they were going to have to take care of it, they would give you those testing strips. They'd get you the material. They'd get you the drugs. They'd get you the preventative stuff to not let you get to that point. But we don't have that now. We got the taxpayer as the last resort, but the taxpayer will pick it up because we can profit. We can reap the benefits. And that's the world we live in. That's the G-O me, man. Hooray for me and screw you. And this Kathleen Kane, I got to tell you, looking at her resume, looking at her stuff, she looks like a Republican in Democrats' clothing. But again, too often what we see is we see these bad Democrats, these corporate Democrats, who are out there doing the bidding of the 1%, out there doing the bidding of the plush class. You and I, we get screwed. That's why we need to be active. That's why we need to be engaged. That's why we need to get together. Quick break, right back after this.
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show.
This is WFTE 90.3 FM Mount Cobb and W289 AU 105.7 FM Scranton, Pennsylvania. Listen to us throughout Northeast Pennsylvania or check us out on the web at WFTE.org.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. IBEW President Ed Hill says the ongoing Wisconsin struggle to reassert public worker collective bargaining rights and recall the Republican governor who took them away is a critical struggle for the whole national trade union movement.
As far as I'm concerned, the trade union movement owes a debt of gratitude to the people of Wisconsin. What the people in Wisconsin are doing right now is critical to the trade union movement and what they've been doing for the last year.
And in this highly charged political election year, Hill says he's trying to get a vital message across to his members and other workers about the coming presidential election.
In my opinion, if labor isn't fired up behind President Obama, we got a real problem on our hands. And we're trying to get our membership to understand that while we're not really satisfied 100% with President Obama, he has been there for us in a number of ways. And we need to stick with somebody that at least we can talk to.
Wisconsin unions and progressive allies are planning a big rally this Saturday at the Capitol in Madison and other pro-labor activities throughout the weekend. Teamsters President Jim Hoffa says the federal government's claim that allowing Mexican trucks to have free rein on U.S. roads won't affect Teamster truck drivers is bizarre. The Teamsters have sued the government over allowing the Mexican trucks. The suit claims violations of several existing laws, including safety regulations. The case has been consolidated with a similar lawsuit filed by the Owner-Operator Independent Drivers Association. Hoffa says opening the border to low-paid truck drivers in dangerous, dirty trucks harms Teamster drivers and endangers the American driving public. The productivity of workers in the United States is starting to slow. Jesse Russell reports.
New numbers from the Labor Department suggest employers may soon need to start hiring more employees because current employees are reaching their peak productivity. The output of workers only increased by 0.9%, down from a gain of 1.8% over the previous 3 months. Meanwhile, expenses per worker jumped 2.8%. This means employers may have hit the ceiling for squeezing more work out of employees instead of bringing on more workers. Typically, when productivity starts to slow, employers need to start bringing on more employees, which would be a plus for the economy. The U.S. saw 2 months of payroll gains, and many economists project that trend will continue when January numbers are revealed.
This is what democracy looks like, Wisconsin's Worker Uprising, a one-hour radio documentary produced by Workers Independent News in conjunction with WORT. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I'm passionate about our economic liberty because I have witnessed our free enterprise system as it rewards the hard work of many and creates prosperity for all in this great country. And over the past few weeks, we've seen a frontal assault on free enterprise.
Once I made you rich enough to forget my name in Youngstown.
According to reports by the Center for Public Integrity, the right-wing assault squad over at the International Chamber of Commerce, they're planning a $50 million media blitz. They're going to continue their attacks against Democratic House and senatorial candidates. And you look at the spending that's going on, it underscores the huge political stakes for the chamber. And their big corporate sponsors, the big supporters, the big energy people, the insurance interests. You look at the healthcare industry, you look at Wall Street, the billionaires are about to speak. And you look at this whole primary season. It has been the billionaire puppet hour, where you've got all of Snow White and all the other seven dwarfs out there dancing to the billionaire tune. And now we're just down to four dwarfs. And they've each got their own billionaire backer. Is this good? Is this good for democracy? Is this the right way to go? I look at my hometown of Cleveland. Kucinich had someone from Texas spending millions of dollars in a Cleveland district because he's got the money. So much for the people of Cleveland. So much for local. So much for we the people. So how do we stop it? Since Citizens United, everything has gone haywire. Look across the country. Numerous communities have said no more. So I've asked Kurt Dames, a retired inventor from San Diego who now lives in Vermont, Brattleboro, to come talk to us about what they're doing up in Vermont. Kurt, thanks for taking time for me.
Hi.
You know, I look at a large number of communities in Vermont saying, no, we got to take money out of this.
Yeah, there's resolutions passed in 60 towns around Vermont.
60 towns across the state. Vermont's not a very big state. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Well, no, it's not a very big state, but I think the idea of these loosely associated efforts was to motivate the state legislature to initiate the amendment.
So let's talk about the amendment. What's the premise that you have up in Vermont?
Well, Rick, there are two basic ideas that have kind of grown together. The first one is, of course, an effort to undo the Citizens United decision. And the second one has kind of grown up around it, and that's a general effort to rescind corporate personhood. And these things are certainly closely related, but you know, there's a big difference. The second is really really takes us back to, I don't know, 1600. And the first corporate personhood speech rights takes us back just a few years.
Yeah, I mean, going back that far, maybe New Hampshire, the couple of Republicans they had over there who said that all of the legislation coming out of New Hampshire should be grounded and find its origins in the Magna Carta. Maybe they weren't too far off.
Yeah, maybe they weren't. I mean, we've been making mistakes for a long time. That is, as a society in general, we make a lot of mistakes.
So you disagree with Mitt Romney when he says...
Corporations are people, my friend.
So you disagree with the Romney on corporations being people.
Yeah, I mean it's a fiction. They're half people. They have rights. Corporations have rights, but they have very limited responsibilities. As a matter of fact, one kind of corporation is called a limited liability corporation.
Right.
So if a bunch of people get together and decide that they want to have, you know, they don't want to get in trouble, you know, hey, let's file some paperwork so we're not responsible for what our corporation does. That's not really a whole person. That's half a person. Corporations have lots of rights. You know, they can own property, they can hire, they can make contracts, but they don't. It's very difficult to hold them responsible for crimes.
And we can't kill
they
them.
They don't get drafted.
Right.
I mean, that would be great if we could tell Boeing, all right, you like to fund the wars. Okay, let's see all of Boeing's operations be devoted to making warplanes at very low wages, like people do when they sign up for military service. They can't be drafted. So there's a lot of things they can't do. They're not really complete people at all.
Yeah, and what bothers me about this is they have so much money, and you look at this primary going on right now, and how little money it takes to sway these people. I mean, $10 million may sound like an awful lot of money to people like you and me, but to someone like Sheldon Adelson, who's worth $25 billion, $10 million is walking around change, and yet he's propped up a presidential candidate, Newt Gingrich,
yeah,
and pushing some very radical ideas and rattling the sabers of war with Iran.
Yeah, that's horrible.
And that's what frightens me. And, you know, and yesterday I talked a bit about Smedley Butler, Major General Smedley Butler, and his peace war is a racket. You get these kind of people who now have the power to push presidential candidates, push the agenda, and to something like a war where they're going to benefit from and they're going to profit from while you and I die. I have a serious, serious problem with that.
Yeah, me too. The corporations, you know, weren't always such a bad thing. I mean, people don't realize their town is a corporation. The city where you live, that's a corporation.
Right.
And it's got to be a corporation so that it can persist, so that it doesn't just, you know, end when the mayor dies or, you know, who knows what else could happen. That certain entities need to proceed, need to be able to act as a group.
Right. I'm not anti-corporation. And then, look, I'm not saying we do away with corporations. I'm just saying that they shouldn't have mass power and that they're
right.
not
and
people. They're kind
of they got mass power now because of the huge amounts of money. And now people don't recognize money is pretty much equatable with speech. So if this corporation is a person, he's got more speech than you. That's not right. That's not equal representation under the law. That's a perversion of free
right.
speech.
You know, my grandfather always used to say, you know, you can afford to, you have as many rights as you can afford to defend.
Yeah.
And if you don't have any money and you don't have any power, you have basically no rights. And you look at low-wage workers in this country who are getting screwed every single day. Why? They don't have the power to fight back. You look
yeah.
at these big corporations who have tons of resources, people like GE who get away with not paying taxes. Why? Because
yeah.
they've got the resources.
Yeah. Well, also going on in Vermont is an effort to get general tax fairness instituted. There is a resolution in Marshfield to begin that, and there are some people in Brattleboro whose team I'm on to start a local Wall Street tax, as was started by one of your own state legislators 3 years ago, Mr. James Harrison. James Harrison brought it to the state legislature in 2009. An effort to get a Wall Street tax. He called it a transaction tax.
Or a Tobin tax. It's basically for every one of these computerized transactions, you put a little tax on. And I've often said what I'd like to see is I want people investing. I don't want people gambling, which is what Wall Street has turned into. Where you say, look, if you hold that stock for 6 months, you hold that position for 6 months, a year, whatever, there's no tax. But if you're one of these people who are trading every 30 seconds or every day, you're going to pay the small amount of tax, and it's going to fund the destruction that you do. It seems logical to me.
Yeah, it does. You know, everything else is taxed. I mean, you invest in real estate, you're taxed. You invest in, you know, antiques, you're taxed. But the people who invest in Wall Street, they're not taxed. And that's, you know, people don't appreciate that. That's $3.9 quadrillion a year. Yeah. Trillions of dollars every year are transacted in this sheltered community and in effect at everyone else's expense.
But Kurt, if you tax it, they'll stop.
Oh, yeah. Well, the thing is, if you tax it just 0.1%, it depends on whose math you use. This kind of figure is being applied in Europe, and a lot of places in the world do it. But a tiny tax in the United States, 0.1%, would bring in enough money to replace the entire income tax revenues. I mean, that's how huge the Wall Street transactions amount, and that's how huge that is.
But, Kurt, what you're talking about here, if I'm getting you right, and let me put my Tea Party hat on, you're talking about redistribution of wealth.
No, I'm just talking about tax fairness.
Oh, see, now that's, to me and my Tea Party hat, that's redistribution. You're stealing from those rich people.
No, I wouldn't do that.
But it's okay to steal food out of the mouths of children and destroy the social safety net in my Tea Party world, but leave the billionaires alone.
Oh, yes, you got to be careful. They might go somewhere else. But, you know, there's been research on that recently, Rick. I wish I could quote chapter and verse. Only a very, very, very tiny bit of moving ever happens to avoid taxes. So in New Hampshire, I think it was in New Hampshire when certain taxes went up, everybody said, oh, no, you can't do that. Our millionaires will move away. But they didn't.
Yeah, they said the same thing in Maryland, too.
They don't. They stay where they are. It's just, you know, to miss out on a few bucks a day is not reason to move, and people just don't do it.
And paying taxes to have a good education system and a decent road infrastructure, that seems pretty rational. Let's go back to the Citizens United resolutions going on. You said there's 60 of them throughout the state.
I think it's 50, actually.
50? Okay. Well, a pretty good number. What are the chances of getting something into your legislature and getting that passed through? Because eventually I do believe that we have to come up with some type of a constitutional amendment, and it's going to start at the state level where we need to have the call for Washington to actually do something.
I'm glad you said that. But it's not a call. This is not a call.
Or a demand.
State legislatures don't call or demand. They do it. State legislatures can initiate the amendment process. This is not a petition for the resolutions in Vermont are not a call for the state legislature to ask the Congress in Washington, D.C. to do something. They can do it. The state legislators can do it.
Right. And you need to have what is it, three quarters?
I forget, two thirds vote in three quarters of the legislatures, or three quarters in, or
you know. I think it's three quarters of the states, and you have to have two thirds vote. But
yeah, and indicated from the votes around Vermont, and my calls to people in other parts of the country, this is something that everybody wants.
Yeah, I think
nobody
we all
likes
get it.
It's extremely high proportions, 90%, 84%, 82%. People want this, and they don't want big corporations purchasing the elections.
Yep, you know, look, they should have the same one vote that I get. That's it. No more, no less, bottom line. That's the end of the road. And I appreciate the work that you're doing, and I appreciate the information of what's going on up there. And we look forward to following this down the road to see where this takes us.
Okay, thanks, Rick.
Kurt, I appreciate it. Kurt Dames, a retired inventor from San Francisco. He now lives up in Brattleboro, Vermont. Thanks for the information. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Only 90% of the world. Where do you fit in? Take a look at yourself. 10% of the people. Only 90% of the world.
Where smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
The corporate propensity for rationalizing the irrational in the pursuit of profit appears to be boundless. Consider J.R. Simplot, a giant conglomerate whose mining operations in Idaho have grossly polluted creeks with selenium, a highly toxic metal. But Simplot's scientists rationalized the corporation's dirty deed with a 1,000-page study asserting that even though the selenium contamination of creeks was well above levels allowed by environmental law, the water remained, quote, safe for fish. Tucked back in the appendix of Simplot's study, however, were a few photographs that vividly depicted the screaming irrationality of the corporation's safety claims. The most stunning photo was of a two-headed baby trout produced by Simplot's pollution of area creeks. It was not the only sickening deformity caused by the selenium. Other trout had facial, fin, and egg disfigurements. These grotesque mutations led to calls for an independent agency to conduct a full scientific review of Simplot's 1,000-page study. At Senator Barbara Boxer's request, this was done by the Fish and Wildlife Service, which issued a scathing report in January that bluntly branded the corporate study biased. For example, Simplot systemically understated the deformity rate of baby fish in the creeks. It's not 20% that are deformed, but 70%. Asked about this rather broad discrepancy, a Simplot vice president could only grunt that the Fish and Wildlife Review was, quote, totally outside the regulatory process. Well, thank goodness for that. As another independent toxicology expert says, I have seen lots of malformed baby fish, but never one with two heads. We need to be careful here. This is Jim Hightower saying, yes, let's. In fact, let's stop swallowing any irrational rationalization by corporations that pollute for profit.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
And we take a question now from CNNPolitics.com. You can see it up on the screen here. Since birth control is the latest hot topic, which candidate believes in birth control, and if not, why? As you can see, it's a very popular question. It's a very popular question in the audience, as we can see.
Check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can get the podcast from the website or Stitcher for your smartphone. Take the program on the go. And Isaiah earlier on talked about CBS's news story on the Romney. And, you know, it's just mind-blowing. He's talking about China, saying that we here in the United States, we should follow the lead of China when it comes to regulations. He says, you know, it's pretty impressive over there, you know, how quickly they can build things, how productive they are as a society. You should see their airports compared to ours, their highways, their train systems. They're moving quickly, in part because the regulators see their job as encouraging private people. And I'm going, wait a minute. What are you talking about, Mitzi? Their government is investing huge amounts of money. Their government is subsidizing just about every industry. What are you talking about? And he's right. I mean, he's true. Thomas Friedman, it's like Beijing to airport, Beijing to LAX, like going from the Jetsons to the Flintstones. He's right. their highways, their train system. They are spending money. They are investing to technology of today. We're just trying to patch last century's technology. Just hoping it lasts another couple of years so I can retire. And all the while, the Chinese are doing this with our money. We're funding this, folks, you and me. Every time we buy some cheap plastic crap from China, we're building their infrastructure. Every time we buy a product from China, we're building their airports. We're building their stuff. Because we're dumb. We got politicians who say, well, you know, we need to have relations. We need to have trade policy that basically gives away our wealth. I don't mind losing a fight. Lost a lot of fights in my life. But you know what? I gotta be honest. I've always gotten a lick in myself. And you always fight back. We're not fighting back. We're saying, oh, here, China, take it. Because the corporate CEOs, the bigwigs, that's what they want. And you look at the reality. Last month, we had a $52.6 billion trade deficit in 1 month with the rest of the world. $52.6 billion. With China alone, we had $26 billion trade deficit. Half of our trade deficits with China. And he's saying we should be like them. And let me ask you, do you want to be like them? Do you want to live 500,000 people in a two-mile area? To where the 10, 15 people in a room, to where, hey, we need some just-in-time labor, and they come and knock on your door, and because that's what they do. 8,000 people, they can get out of bed in an hour and a half, give them a biscuit and some tea and get to work for the next 12 or 14 hours. Is that where you want to live? You want to live in work camps? Because that's where they're taking us. Understand where we're going, folks. We as a nation said, you know what? We want some dignity. We had this. We were here. The 1890s, that's how life was. You lived in company towns. You were there at their behest. And when they didn't need you anymore, they kicked you to the curb. That's where these people want to take us back to. That's where the Romneys want us to go. Workers, women, children, you name it. They want us back there. The elderly, the disabled, they want us back there. The 1890s. And they tell us, well, you know, we're gonna clamp down on the Chinese. In fact, the House passed a bill 370-39. And the Senate had already passed the bill. It's going to go to the president so that we can put countervailing tariffs and duties on the Chinese good and Vietnamese goods. Oh, big tough move. Because you know what? We're protecting the plastic bag manufacturers from the plastic bag manufacturers in Vietnam. And you go, we can't make plastic bags here in the U.S.? Evidently not. We're protecting our steel and aluminum and chemical industries, they're saying. Because the Chinese, they've got it in our sights. They've got us in their sights. They look at an industry. And look, this whole bill came about because the Supreme Court said, you know what, you can't put these kind of duties on them. Can't do it. Over the solar, over the tubes, over the steel tubes and the tires. And now you look at the solar panels, this is what this is trying to protect. Because while we had a very small trade surplus with solar panels in 2010, it is now completely bottomed out. Do you know why? We went from a $247 million surplus in 2010 with the Chinese to a $1.6 billion trade deficit. Why is that? Why do you think that is? That's because the Chinese said, we're taking that industry. That's ours. That's the future. That's how we're going to power our nation. That's how we're going to get off the oil. That's how we're going to be energy independent. We're going to take that. We're going to steal that technology. We're going to make it better. We're going to make it cheaper. And we are going to flood the market. And we're going to put all of those U.S. competitors out of business. And you know how they're going to do that? Because our politicians, the government is going, oh, well, you know, we're going to react maybe someday, only after we're harmed. They're mercantilists. Look, and if you could get away with it, you would do it too. But as long as you've got the Romneys, as long as you've got the wealth class, as long as you got the free marketeers, because you know what the free market decides, as long as you got those folks, we're going to continue to lose. And I'm just, my mind is going to explode with this idea that we need to be more like them. We need to do business more like the Chinese. And I go back to my discussion with the idiot in the hot tub. He cannot wait for labor laws to be done away with so that employers can treat workers any way they want. They want you working 24 hours a day. You're working 24 hours that day. They want to get rid of you at 5 minutes notice. They get rid of you at 5 minutes notice. Understand the world that you're advocating. And I listen to the righties all the time telling me, well, you know, the employer's the king. And they tell this story of a benevolent corporation. Oh, we care. And look, there are some decent employers. Don't get me wrong. There are, especially the small ones where you know the guy who owns the place or you have access to the person who runs the company. Those are usually good places to work, decent places to work because you know the guy. I'm talking about these big shareholder multinationals, these big companies that they don't see you as Rick Smith or John Doe or any. They see you as 743 or 164786. They see you as a number and a tool, something to be used and used and used until you can no longer be used and then you're discarded with no responsibility. That's the world that they want. That's the world the entrepreneurs. That's what they want to ram down our throats. And they continue to push and push and push for legislation to take rights away. Continue to push and push and push to limit your voice. Look, you don't have to join a union, in my opinion. But understand, by making them illegal, by shutting them out, you are cutting off your own nose. Because conditions are going to continue to get worse. Conditions will continue to deteriorate. And maybe someday very soon in this nation, you'll see suicide nets in hallways, in the stairwells, like you see in China. Because we're moving towards that desperation class. We're moving quickly. And I keep telling people, don't think it can't happen here. Because this is where it's happened before. They've brought us this in the past. And while we're bringing manufacturing back, and they keep saying, oh, we're bringing jobs back, I say, under what condition? You know, I look at that grocery direct, $8 an hour to drive around the city of New York. You'd have to be pretty desperate to take that job because it's a horrible job. But that's how things have gotten. And what happens? Understand what happens when the state gives that kind of subsidy to a company like that. Somebody else who may be in that industry, who may be in that line, they now have to compete with $8 an hour, which means they have to pull their wages down. They have to pull it down to meet that $8 an hour. So other workers are going to be pulled down. Everybody gets sucked down by these race to the bottom people. And what's really infuriating is too often you and I are the ones who are funding our own demise. Yeah, I look here in Pennsylvania, the Workers' Compensation Bureau, the people, the insurance company, the big PMA, who's a big insurance company. They take the premiums that employers pay to cover workers, and they use that money to lobby to make it harder for workers to get workers' compensation. I mean, you're paying for your own demise in every single way. And the really hard part for me to swallow is that there are more of us than there are of them. We can outvote them. Yet they're able to slice and dice and keep us divided, keep us at each other's throats by throwing out really just dumb issues. I mean, think about this voting thing. This voter suppression, this voter harassment bill that they're ramming through. Is this creating jobs? And I'm told next week there's going to be a bill that they're going to spend a lot of time on to write on the back of your income tax return check that something like the taxpayer signature goes here. I mean, it's really kind of bizarre. Let's take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Right wing. just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Earth, sky.
Today, the world's loneliest whale.
Whales are social animals, and it's their songs that keep them connected across the vastness of our planet's oceans.
The story of one unique whale is a sad one. This whale, of an unknown species, has been swimming the seas for years, ostracized from its own kind. The reason is its song. The whale sings in a sound frequency that's so high, no other whales will respond.
This loneliest of whales caught the attention of the U.S. Navy in 1989 when their instruments picked up the odd frequency of its song. Similar whales, like blue whales, sing between 15 and 25 hertz, frequencies like the lowest notes on a piano. But this whale sings at 52 hertz, a frequency that's about 8 notes on a piano higher. Here's the song of the 52 hertz whale. Notice its rapid rhythm.
Now listen to the deeper and more languid blue whale song. No one knows why the whale has this communication disability. It could be a hybrid of two different species, forging a unique song that no whale has used before. One scientist has suggested that the lonely whale could be the last survivor of an unidentified species, roaming the oceans in a doomed search for another of its kind.
Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
I love this country. I should love this state. It just feels good being back in Michigan. You know, the trees are the right height. The streets are just right.
There is trouble in the forest.
Nothing but shake your head here at the Romney. I got to be honest with you. The guy must be on something today. I'm cracking up over
this.
He's
now turning me into an unofficial Southerner, and I'm learning to say y'all, and I like grits, and strange things are happening to me.
Strange things. Like, now he's saying he wants us to be like China, because, you know, we need to use regulations like they do. It's impressive what they've done over there. They've built things. And they've done things, yeah, with our money. But wow, the Romney, this guy could be president. That scares me. Anyway, let's go to the phone lines. I've got Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service.
Hey, it's actually Justin today. How are you doing?
Oh, that would have been nice to know earlier.
I apologize.
Hey, Justin, how are you today?
Not too bad. How are you doing?
Not too bad. What's going on with the Romney today?
You know, that's a good question. He seems like he has a bit of the old, you know, it's like he's been stealing Perry's cough syrup or something like that. It's a little strange. But, you know, I like grits as a pretty good campaign slogan.
Yeah, I like grits too, sure. But here's the thing. They're doing strange things to me down south. I think about Deliverance whenever I hear strange things going on down south.
Well, I mean, I think you're missing the bigger story here as someone who's part of the mainstream media. Why has Obama not said if he likes grits yet? That's the real story.
Well, he's still dealing with Huggate.
Of course.
Yeah, you know, because it's important to know that, you know, 20 years ago he hugged a guy, which I really thought, you know, they would have turned into a homosexual thing. They've taken that completely different, though, so.
Oh, just you wait. They'll find a way.
But, you know, again, did you see the big story that Derek A. Bell, he showed up in a tour of the White House?
I did not see that story, but, you know, it's not that surprising. I mean, this was a gentleman who said academic things that were, you know, not suitable for someone who's running for office, which is why he was not someone who ran for office, which is why this is so ridiculous. You know, For all of the fear that the right wing has espoused about being silenced, the fact that they are lavishing so much criticism against somebody who was speaking in purely academic terms was a little shocking.
Yeah, but what the thing is you know, here's it wasn't the same Derek Bell. It was somebody else who just happened to go on a tour of the facility.
You know, that's not the first time it happened, or that's happened. I believe there was a gentleman who had the same name as the Weather Underground fellow.
Oh, Ailes.
There we go, Ailes, who also had a White House tour, and, you know, there was a brief little right-wing field day on that in the blogosphere, but that that also turned out not to have any legs.
See, there's a lot of people who need to get a job. Anyway, so and speaking of jobs, the numbers out today, was it 227,000?
Yes, 227,000 new jobs added to the economy. You know, however, the unemployment rate has stayed the same, but there is a silver lining to that. That number is because more people are now in the job market looking for work, which is pretty good news for the Obama administration, since that reflects improved economic certainty.
So you must be an Obama guy if you see some positive in this, because it stayed the same.
No, of course not. No, I mean, well, I am someone who's in the media, so of course I'm secretly trying to hide things. I hate all the bad news about this.
That must be it.
But, you know, strictly politically speaking, this is good news, and this is a trend that if it continues is going to help them on Election Day. And we've seen the typical response from the Republicans basically saying, okay, congratulations, but this isn't good enough. Or they're also arguing, well, it's not at 8%, which is what the president promised back in, 2008. That would never go over if we passed the Recovery Act. And we're also seeing some people attack him once again on the Keystone Pipeline, which is worth noting that he was a project that he didn't actually oppose, but just wanted to be taken care of in a more, sound way. So we're seeing the usual responses to this story.
Yeah, I mean, but I look at the Keystone Pipeline, and look, and the position I've taken, I think is a logical one. If you build it to Chicago, and that oil stays here in the U.S., okay, I'm okay with it. Shipping it from Canada all the way through the U.S. to a free trade zone in Texas that's shipped out into the international community and non-taxable here in the U.S., I don't see how that benefits me. I'm sorry.
No, that's a very good point. And, you know, at the end of the day, though, this wasn't something that he was trying to kill. This is something that he was just trying to get done in a typically normal way, and it was unfortunately politicized. You know, at the end of the day, it's an argument that doesn't seem like it's going to be sticking, and is really being overshadowed by the fact that the jobs numbers were so positive today.
Yeah, and that's a good thing. It's at least movement in the right direction, because I got to tell you, I heard Romney give a speech not too long ago where he had used the solid 8% number, and we're saving that so when it comes election time and it goes below that, then he can say nothing, because to him 8% was good.
No, that's true. That's a very good point. You know, the White House still has a lot of work to do, though, on this front. You know, a lot of people are pointing out that no president has been able to win with unemployment over 7.2%. But it looks like if any president is really going to buck that trend, it's going to be Obama at this point.
Because I think people realize, and most of my friends are starting to come around to the idea that, look, we can't get a transportation bill pushed through, which would bring jobs. And I point to the Republican Stephen LaTourette, and I've said this a million times, and I'll say it more. He gets it. He said for every $1 billion of investment, going to create 42,000 new jobs. And that's a Republican saying that. This isn't some radical lefty. They get that, which is why I firmly believe they will hold up this transportation bill as long as they can, because they don't want those jobs coming anywhere near election time.
You know, and that was also the initial basis for a lot of opposition, as some people would say, to the Recovery Act. People realized that if it was going to be an aggressive package, then Obama would be off to a good start, and opposed it on strictly political means, as a lot of people here in the Beltway think.
I think back to right about the time Obama was coming into office. I don't even think he was really in office yet, and you had Limbaugh saying,
"I hope he fails,"
and that was it. You had McConnell saying, "One term president, that's our job." Even before the guy knew where the bathroom was in the White House.
That's true. There never really was any moment of giving him the benefit of the doubt, which, you know, could probably be best explained in the fact that there was a major Tea Party movement about 4 days after, or 4 months after he took office.
Yep.
Before he, you know, even had a chance to raise taxes, when, in fact, he slashed taxes after taking office. You know, that just shows how eager a lot of these people are to just kind of jump the gun.
There you are, that liberal fact-based media there. The frame, my friend, is nobody got tax breaks, even though we know, 90% of the population. Lastly, down south, I hear the Romney going on. They do strange things to me down there. A little earlier, I was listening to Rick Santorum trying to hick it up down south, trying to lose the G's on his words. What's going on down there? How's this going to play out the next couple of weeks?
Well, right now, Romney is not doing as poorly as a lot of people thought. In fact, there's even a Rasmussen report that shows that he's leading in Mississippi and doing pretty well in Alabama, coming in about 2 points behind Gingrich, who's leading over there. It's going to be a pretty hard-fought battle, though. Right now, a lot of people are saying to keep an eye on Gingrich, since he has been doing pretty well in the Deep South so far and is hoping to kind of move forward with that reputation. But in the long run, it doesn't look like Obama or like Romney is going to get much good news through the next primary races.
That's good.
These are officially being declared for Santorum and for Gingrich, but he could surprise a lot of people.
Yeah, I saw that Mississippi Governor, I think it was Mississippi Governor Haley Barbour, he is backing Romney, which I was kind of surprised at.
That was the fact that the Mississippi Governor is willing to throw his chips in with Romney is a pretty surprising development, to be sure.
A Massachusetts liberal. I would have thought for sure he'd have been his twin brother. He would have supported his twin brother there, Newt Gingrich.
That would not have been surprising. And, frankly, the fact that Gingrich isn't skyrocketing in a lot of these polls right now is a little strange, since that's what the Gingrich campaign is really basing the future off of.
All I want to know is this going to continue into April, where Pennsylvania may actually have a say in the primary process?
It really depends. Right now, none of the anti-Romney people are really seriously giving any indications that they're going to drop out. And if they don't, it looks like it's going to be, that will really depend on how the race is going to develop. If it's three people dividing up the vote, it looks like it may be shortened. But at the same time, if suddenly there's a deal to have just one mainstream conservative candidate, then this may be a race that's going to go on for quite a bit longer.
That's what I'm hoping. That's what I'm hoping. Justin Duckham, I appreciate the time. Talk Radio News Service. Have a great weekend.
You too. Take it easy.
And, you look at this, and, the Romney just blowing my mind. Regulators need to be more friendly with business like they are in China. I've been telling you this for the longest time, folks. That's where they want us to be. That's where they want to take us. Take a look at China. Take a look at the reports that are coming out of there. That's what it's going to be like here. Under a conservative rule. If in November the economy goes downward, you see $5 gallon gas, you see a rise in unemployment, we're going to see Republicans sweep in. And the Republicans know this. The Wall Street gamblers know this. And they're going to work to make sure it happens. That's going to be the October surprise. We've got to be aware of it. And we've got to fight back. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
The 19th century saw regular work weeks of 70 hours or more. Many attempts were made to get legislatures across the country to pass maximum hour laws limiting the number of hours an employee could be compelled to labor. The first union victory in capping work hours was won by the building trades in 1840. They won a 60-hour week. In 1874, the state of Massachusetts became the first to pass a law mandating a maximum hours for women. Other states followed as union activists around the country fought to pass laws to protect workers. Their work stalled in 1905 when the U.S. Supreme Court ruled the New York Bake Shop Act unconstitutional, citing a sacred bond between master and employee and the liberty of contract. With this decision, the Lochner era, named after bakery owner Joseph Lochner, who had been cited, tried, and convicted of working employees beyond the 60-hour limit, began. This single decision opened the floodgates, allowing attacks on child labor laws, minimum wage laws, as well as maximum hour laws by corporate and anti-union interests. Only only after President Franklin Delano Roosevelt threatened to enlarge the United States Supreme Court from 9 to 13 did the court do an about-face with regard to liberty of contract and what has been called a switch in time to save 9, ruling in West Coast Hotel versus Parrish that Elsie Parrish was indeed entitled to the state of Washington's minimum wage, regardless of what conditions she agreed to, marking the end of the Lochner era. FDR's New Deal policies helped workers reclaim lost ground in their fight for the American dream. The proposal and passage of the Fair Labor Standards Act, federally restricting weekly hours, mandating overtime pay, setting a minimum wage, and restricting the exploitative use of child labor, was an essential step forward for workers, families, and communities. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center of IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
When you wake up in the morning, do you care about the price of gold?
Well, I pay attention to the price of gold, but I think it reflects a lot of things. It reflects global uncertainties. I think the reason people hold gold is as a protection against what we call tail risk, really, really bad outcomes. And to the extent that the last few years have made people more worried about the potential of a major crisis, then they have gold as a protection.
Do you think gold is money?
No.
It's not money.
Even if it's been money
for 6,000 years, somebody reverse that and eliminate that economic law.
Eliminate that economic law. And again, I don't remember finding that anywhere, but, you know, hey, it is what it is. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails personally. And if you missed any portion of our program, you can download the podcast from the website or get the Stitcher app on your smartphone and take the program on the go. Today on the big program, we talked with Pennsylvania AFL-CIO President Rick Bloomingdale about the voter suppression stuff going on here in Pennsylvania, you know, the harassment that they're trying to throw out there so that people stay away from the polls. That's the goal there. We also talked with Isaiah Poole from the Campaign for America's Future about the jobs numbers. I also talked with Sarah Jaffe from Alternate Labor about the, and this is still just blowing my mind, giving tax dollars to these union-busting companies, this whole beggar-thy-neighbor economic development where one state goes, hey, we'll give you some money, and another state goes, oh, we'll give you some money, and basically you're not creating any jobs. You're just giving more money to somebody who then puts it in their pocket and hands it out to their shareholders. A nice gig if you can get it, but another screw job. I mean, you and I, we're paying for this. We also talked with Kurt Dames from Vermont about the movement up there to undo Citizens United. Again, you know, one of those things where you go, at some point, we wake up. At some point, we fight back, and you're seeing it happen up there in Vermont. A couple of quick emails I got during the break. Andy writes, it's bad out there for working folks. Very bad. Citizens in the U.S. aren't treated with human rights and dignity in the workplace. The U.S. is a human rights violator. Something drastic is going to happen to change around this scenario. We need to fight back against CEO rulers. He said, in particular, this H1B BS going on in Silicon Valley, it's really, really getting him mad. He also pointed out an article about natural gas prices tanking. So you'll see less drilling. And again, we're going to get stuck picking up the tab to clean up their mess. But he's right. I mean, at the end of the day, something drastic is going to have to happen. And the reality is, and there was part of me, and I got to be honest, there was part of me that wanted McCain to win in 2008 because they would have done the same things that the Hoover administration did. More cut and punish. Hey, tough it out. Things will turn around. You know, the Romney view. You know, let the market collapse. And then once it rock bottoms and everybody loses their pension, their homes, and their wealth, and their savings and everything, then the Romneys and the investor class come in, sweep it up, buy it at fire sale prices, and they become wildly wealthy. And we've seen a lot of that going on. And it was because of the policies of the Obama administration saying, you know what, we need to help people. We can't have a scorched earth mentality. We've got to give, you know, some food stamps to help feed people. We didn't see the long bread lines. We didn't see the long unemployment lines. We've done a masterful job of hiding the poor, a masterful job of hiding and covering up the poverty that's in this country. Masterful. And, you know, I had said at the time, if we had that mass collapse and you had that pain and suffering, because I do believe the mind only gets right when the stomach's empty. You only begin to see clearly when you go, I'm looking into the eyes of my kids and I know they're hungry and there's nothing I can do. The Republicans want to take us to that place. And there's a part of me that says maybe we need to go there. But then there's that part of me that grew up with a Christian mother, grew up in the Catholic Church, and believe in social and economic justice, who believe in helping my neighbor, who believe in, well, feeding the hungry, giving shelter to the homeless, helping the poor, the sick, the aged. Part of me that, you know, I know, that's the liberal part of me. Softy liberal. Yeah, in that vein, I guess I am. The other part of me, just that angry part, that rabid right winger, that you kind of have to put in check. That selfish, childish part of me, and we all have it. Some just in a bigger proportion than others, and they generally call themselves Republicans. I got another email from Brandon who writes, "You've been talking a lot about my city lately, and I'm very happy that you bring up the problems that you see. Harrisburg is in deep trouble." He said, I should watch the movie Blue Gold, which this weekend I will attempt to do. Because look, as he points out in the email, watersheds are important and they're public utilities that are good to keep under the control of we the people. If we privatize and look out, we're going to have trouble. And I think, you know, we've already talked, you know, Bolivia is a perfect example. You couldn't even put a bucket out in the street and catch rainwater without Bechtel. Does the name Bechtel mean anything? They're the ones who own the private water in Bolivia. And what's amazing to me is they're celebrating a 10-year anniversary of celebrating, of repatriating their water, taking their water back and having it into the public's control. And here we are in the U.S. saying, oh no, we want to privatize it. How screwed up is that? Now understand, when Bechtel owned the water in Bolivia, rates went up 300%. That's where we're heading. Understand, they do this, your rates are going to go up. No doubts about it. No doubt about it at all. And Washington State, talking about privatization, Washington State is hawking off their liquor stores. $1,000 is the minimum bid. So you could buy a liquor store for $1,000. I seem to remember here in Pennsylvania, they were telling me they were going to get $2 or $3 million per liquor license. In Washington, they want to get rid of them for $1,000. And I'm telling you, I think that's where we're going to end up heading. If Terzai and the rest of the right wing in this state get their way. Because they don't believe in anything being ours. Nothing can belong to we the people. Everything has to be in the hands of profiteers. Everything has to be in the hands of the property class. Now, I go back to, you know, the water thing. I remember when I was a kid, you'd go to the public park and there'd be water fountains every so often. You'd go to the swimming pool, there's a water fountain out front. Schools, you had water fountains on the outside of the school. So where you were playing basketball or doing whatever, it was there so you could get a drink. Those are gone, folks. G-O-N-E, gone. I'd love to know if there's a public water fountain anywhere around. I would. Because what we've done is we've made it a commodity. It's now something that you can buy it. You get a bottle of water. We can give you tap water for $1.50. Think about it. I mean, think of how amazing that is. And now we're talking about privatizing our entire water system. Jeez. Is there nothing? Is there nothing sacred? Amazing. A little earlier, I talked about the idea of cradle-to-grave health care and got an email during the break telling me I'm crazy and clueless. Look, there's an incentive there. And I was thinking about this during the break as I was reading through this email. If these health insurance companies, if these providers of health care, if all of these people had a stake in this, and keeping you well, not just reacting to your problems, but actually keeping you well. I started thinking about our trade policy. And you go, well, Rick, how can you tie healthcare into trade policy? Do you remember me talking about not too long ago about this nation of origin labeling that evidently the WTO said we as Americans can't know where our meat is coming from, because if it were labeled from Canada or Mexico, somehow that would be a trade barrier, and it would be injurious to those two countries to know that my meat is coming from Mexico. Over the weekend, I was back in Cleveland. I was talking to my aunt, who is one of these very picky, very fastidious, persnickety kind of people. And you need those folks to be keeping an eye on things. But she said, I buy meat from the grocery store, and it seems a lot saltier. And we had gone out to a restaurant, and the steak was. It was really very salty. And she goes, I've been noticing everywhere I go now, the meat is much saltier. It's just much worse. And she's like, why do you think that is? And immediately my mind goes to trade policy. Fact of the matter is, you got green meat in Mexico or whatever you got going on. You want to cure it. You want to make it last longer. You cure it with salt, right? I mean, isn't that how you do it? So you ship it in here and you end up, putting it on the table. If you had health insurance, if you had health providers, if you had that entity needing to keep you well, our trade policy would be looking at that. You would have a massive interest in saying, whoa, whoa, whoa. We don't want to have salt-laden meat just to keep it so it can be shipped from Mexico to Pennsylvania when we've got cows here in Pennsylvania. And you look at this whistleblower who just came out, former Department of Agricultural scientist. He said, you know what? This just blew my mind. There's this substance that they call pink slime. It's basically the connective tissue and some cartilage and stuff. It's the stuff that was meant for dog food. Not classified as meat, not for human consumption, none of that stuff. In fact, it contains ammonia, well, because we need to kill off the bacteria. Evidently, about 70% of ground beef sold in the U.S. has this pink slime in it. And it doesn't go into where this meat is ground or any of this other stuff, but 70% has this slime in it. And you go, you go back to the health insurance. You go back to that person who's supposed to be keeping you healthy. Wouldn't they have a say in this? You go back to the inspections of things coming into this country. Do you think toothpaste would have antifreeze in it if the health insurance industry had to pay for that? Do you think food, breast milk coming in or formula coming in from China would have melamine in it? Of course not. Of course not. But what we've done is we've done a nice job of insulating them from any costs, because most of the real costs end up on the back of the taxpayers. The way they like it. Anyway, just amazing, amazing stuff. Again, if you missed any portion of the program, thericksmithshow.com, best place to go to get our podcast. Or if you've got a smartphone, get the Stitcher app. You can take the program on the go. rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you want to email me, got something on your mind, story, something that ticked you off that I said, I particularly like those. It's always nice to hear somebody complain. It means I caught their attention. And the reality is, folks, we're all in this together, and we should be fighting every single day not to make this a better place for the 1%, but a better place for all of us, a place where we can raise our children and know the neighborhoods are safe and the schools are decent and good, and to know that the hamburger I may have for dinner doesn't have pink slime in it. Have a great weekend. We'll see you back here on Monday.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@thericksmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like time and flood beneath the bitter sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous ray. Democracy is coming.
People off the street, literally abducted.